Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 413. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me as always are John Lindemann.
It is my pleasure to be here, Johnny.
Guillaume Veillette.
Hey, hey, hey.
And James Jones.
Yep.
Yep.
I'm just thinking about what we got coming up. The answer is simply yes.
We've got a lot on our minds. We're doing our top five games of 2014 later in the show, and we've all been cramming things in and shuffling the list and trying to make sure we didn't forget anything.
James is furiously cramming Sonic Boom right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think Sega jump pause. I believe Sega managed to frantically cram Sonic Boom.
Well done. That is going to be the second segment of the show. First up, we just had a really big Nintendo Direct, and there were just tons of announcements. We're not going to get into every single little detail that came up. I'm sure you can find other podcasts that will just run through everything. I kind of wanted to spend this segment talking about it, and maybe we'll read a few listener comments, emails about it. But mainly, I just wanted to take some time to discuss what's going on with Nintendo currently, because this is the first big set of announcements of the new year. And it covers, basically everything happening up through about May. I think they talked about pretty much every game they have coming out until May. And of course, in June is E3. So, not that we won't have any more announcements until E3, but this is, this is the Q1, basically, Q1 plus. And there's a bunch of stuff. Of course, I think first and foremost, we need to talk about new 3DS. That is the biggest announcement. Of course, we already knew all about it. I cracked me up watching Reggie go through the list of features and everything, which you have to do. But I feel like Most of the people watching that video probably knew everything that he was saying on there.
Yeah. Yep.
Sometimes it helps to actually see it in action and, in this case, Nintendo of America's approach to marketing the new 3DS XL, which we'll get into that distinction in a minute. But their approach is I think the marketing slogan is seeing is believing. And they seem to be really focused on the enhanced 3D effect. And just like back when they first ever showed off the 3DS at E3 a long time ago, a show that James and I talk about frequently, because we were there and it was fascinating to see how they handled that. There seems to be a sense that they feel like you really need to try it for yourself before you can understand what makes it appealing. And that presents an interesting challenge for Nintendo, especially given their poor situation in retail right now, I would say. But I'm curious what you guys got out of the new Nintendo 3DS XL announcement. What aspects do you find the most interesting? I can guess.
The Majora's Mask edition?
Oh, okay. That's not where I thought you were going.
No, hold on. The Majora's Mask skin that doesn't come with the fucking game.
I don't mind that because I get to buy the special version of the game.
But
I don't care. Oh,
maybe that's why they're doing it.
It makes me happy because
why not just make the whole give that edition everything? Say this is the special version of the game, and because you're already fucking buying a system with Majora's Gob on it. I mean, at this point, you've pretty much said I want everything.
Right. James,
include,
you're so angry.
Include the figure.
No,
in
it's
there
just and fucking stupid, John. Stupid people deserve to get yelled at.
It's just.
I didn't think we were starting with Majora.
I kind of skipped the part where he talked about the new Nintendo 3DS XL. I just
because you ran out of battery, didn't have a charger to charge yourself, right?
Oh god, yeah, that's probably the most striking part of that announcement. Whoa. The fact that it doesn't come with the proprietary cable.
They did this shit with the XL too. It's fucking ridiculous.
But no,
pretty sure the XL in America came with an adapter. I think a lot of other regions it did not.
Yeah. Yes.
Who doesn't have an AC adapter though? Now, I mean, really, the people that are going to buy this thing, this one, and not the cheaper 3DS, which will drop in price when this thing comes out,
John,
and which will sell to people that are actually that aren't the hardcore.
Hold the fuck up, John.
I'm holding.
Every phone I have bought for the last 4 years has used the exact same charger. Yet they still fucking come with chargers every time.
Yeah.
Why? Because you fucking need one to charge your phone, and they don't even use proprietary chargers. They use fucking USB-B.
Yeah, I think if 3DS, if the new 3DS XL, which I hate saying out loud, I just can't believe they stuck with that name.
This is so bad. Your life.
I know. As someone who actually has to say these things out loud many, many, many times, Nintendo's continued ignorance in naming their products really is starting to chap my ass, and it has been bothering me since about 2006.
Man, you guys are the saltiest motherfuckers about the 3DS XL. Holy crap.
Anyway, John, the real practical, true response to what you just said about the charger is that when people, obviously, 90% of, maybe 99% of the people who are going to buy this thing already have a 3DS, right? That we understand that. The point is, what are you going to do with the old one? You're going to give it to somebody, or you're going to go trade it in, or you're going to sell it on eBay or whatever. And whoever you give it to, for money or not, is going to expect to get a charger with it. So either you keep the old charger and give them a system without one, or you give them the charger and then you have to go fucking buy one. Either way, it's ridiculous.
Come on, the market's going to correct. If you sell that thing on eBay, the market will correct itself, because those things without a charger will sell for less, and that's just the way it's going to be. And it'll sell for more if you include one in there. And it's fucking
democracy,
Johnny.
You're going to have to go spend $10 to buy a new one. It's just stupid.
This would be
fine if the system worked on USB, but it doesn't.
Right.
It's not universal. It's a proprietary power adapter. And every system must have a charger that goes with it. A lot of people prefer to have two.
Yeah, it's a travesty. Let's move on.
Let's get angrier. Why are we not getting the regular size new 3DS? What the fuck, Nintendo? What the fuck?
That's the real issue. And I think I know the reason here. Obviously, there are people. There are very vocal people, and we know a lot of them, who are extremely upset by this. I suspect that the overlap of people who are really upset by this and people that I know on the internet is very, very high ratio. So I'm not sure how many people in the larger world are super really pissed off about this, but I certainly know people who are incredibly pissed off about it. And James is, I guess, the one in our group who is the most.
I mean, this way, if they were releasing the regular size new 3DS on launch day, I would buy a launch unit. But I am not going to buy the XL, because I know at some point they're likely to crack and say, okay, here's your new 3DS Lite, you fucking assholes. And then I'll actually be able to get the system I want. And right now there's no exclusive games for the system that I really need. So.
Right.
I mean, they could have my money now, but they've opted instead to go, nah, we don't want it.
So what you need is for NOA to come out and say, we are never going to sell the regular size.
Basically. Yeah. I need them.
And I think they should. If that is their intention, I think they should come out and say that. They just need to be upfront.
I mean,
it's not
going to make me buy the XL, though. It's just going to make me wait until the XL drops in price. Cause the day the new 3DS regular size comes out, I will buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And in Japan, the XL has vastly outnumbered the regular new 3DS.
Okay, but I mean, that doesn't mean you can't make a limited number of the regular ones
available. Yeah, I know, but like, I just want to say that up until now.
Making limited numbers of things has already gotten them in pretty deep water lately.
Yeah.
I think they will eventually. Like, just remember that up until this week, Nintendo of America has pretended that the new 3DS was not a thing.
Yeah, but so did Europe, and Europe's not fucking around like this.
That's true.
Rolling out a separate product line is such a big deal, though. There's like, you have to design different packaging and all kinds of bullshit like that.
So here's what I don't get. Why did they make different hardware for the North American market? What the fuck?
What do you mean different?
Yeah.
So the layout of things like, that's a layout, but like, they went and made custom buttons and stuff for the North American market. Like, they're physically different looking buttons.
What do you mean?
It's a different color?
Yeah, the different colors. Hmm.
Okay, but the outside's a different color too.
I know, but why not just make them the same and then flash them to whatever region they need to be? And you can deal with a large portion of your product line nonsense. Part of this is self-inflicted. This is the opposite of the Amiibos, where there's just a limit to what you can make. They said, let's make this more complicated to produce these things. They increased the degree of difficulty for themselves for no real tangible gain that I can perceive.
Yeah, well, they can just take my money.
Yeah.
They're getting all my monies, so
I think,
I'm buying it all, so I don't give a shit.
I think there's a couple of reasons that this is going down this way. First, I think they expect overall to sell a fairly low number of these. I think they look at 3DS hardware sales in America, which are bad and have been bad for a while. And they think it's going to get juiced by a new model because there are people like me who, of course, will buy it. For me, it's an upgrade to the XL that I already know and love, and I want the new features. So I'll buy it. Sure. Why not? But this is not going to convert anybody to 3DS who wasn't already playing 3DS. You know, true. This is not going to get them any new customers. And so it's just never going to be like a runaway hit. Unless some freaky, you know, unless the new Pokemon comes out, and I don't mean literally the next Pokemon. I mean the next game that is like a Pokemon style phenomenon. You know, unless Puzzle and Dragons comes out and somehow, you know, works better on new 3DS and everybody flips their shit about it and goes crazy. I think this thing is going to be kind of a niche product until somewhere down the road when they really find a way to actually kind of create an actual new platform. And sort of relaunch it. But I mean, the fact that this thing's coming out in February tells you a lot, I think, about how mainstream they think it's going to be, which is not at all. This is not a mainstream product.
Well, hold on. Hold the fuck up. Because the original 3DS came out in March. So it's not like releasing handhelds in this time frame is weird to them.
Do you remember how well that went over, James?
Oh, I remember, but they don't seem to think that this is the problem.
It's a problem.
Well, that's
it's a problem. It's a problem.
It doesn't matter if it's a problem. It's what they perceive to be a problem.
Okay. Well, the other thing is Guillaume hit it right on the head. I mean, in Japan, where really the smaller one you would think would be more appealing to people, especially with the interchangeable faceplates and shit like that, it was dramatically outsold by the XL. Which I think they're just using that as market research. They're saying, look, it doesn't matter how attractive we make the smaller one. We give it the Super Famicom colored buttons and everything. People still want a bigger screen. And that effect is only going to be amplified in America, where people generally want bigger things anyway.
Yeah. And the handheld market's a bit tougher over here too.
So they know, trust me, when they made this decision, they knew they would piss off some hardcore Nintendo fans. Think about the number of people they're going to piss off is so tiny, because it's people who already know about the new 3DS, which is a pretty small – I mean, you know, it's a pretty hardcore demographic who already is aware of this thing and it understands the differences. And it's even a subset of them who actually want the smaller one. And those people, it sucks for them because they want it real bad. But they're going to be fine. I mean, they're not really being denied anything functional here. If you want to play Xenoblade on the new 3DS, there is a product being released in your region that will do that. It may not be the size that you like. It might be 1 inch wider than what you would prefer. But you know what? You can take it or leave it. But I mean, it's not like they're denying you. You're not getting screwed out of anything. The number of units that they're actually going to sell here is small enough that splitting hairs over lots of different versions of it is just not worth it.
Well, then fucking stop making the 2DS. I mean, Jesus Christ. Talk about a product that has no value.
They probably already have stopped making the 2DS.
Even though it's like the most mass market unit since it's the cheapest?
It has sold incredibly poorly. It still has never been released in Japan.
Because it's stupid.
I mean, I think it's a great product for a very particular, you know, very young demographic. But it's just it's unpopular. It's more unpopular than 3DS. And that's saying something. Because right now 3DS is not doing that great. Which is too bad, because there's a lot of games coming out for it. And I think we should talk about some of them. Let's talk about games might actually play. How about that?
James, let me
make you happy. Let me turn you around, buddy. Let's talk about Fire Emblem.
No, let's fucking talk about the 3DS. I want to just keep going.
I am talking about the 3DS.
No, let's talk about bad hardware
decisions.
Let's talk
about phones. That's what I want to talk about.
let's talk about the latest in the Fire Emblem series, which I guess is the working title.
It looks pretty good. Game. I'm not really a huge Fire Emblem guy, but it looks pretty cool.
See, I was looking at the visuals, and I guess it's still pretty mid-dev, because there's definitely a somewhat minor step visually from the previous game.
Sure.
Minor step down.
I read correctly? Like, the Japanese name is like Fire Emblem If?
If?
If.
Huh. That would make, that would tie into what Iwata was saying about it, which is that you're going to have more major decisions to make than in other games in the series.
You have plot agency.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to make a character named James Jones and let that motherfucker die over and over again.
You don't get to name your character as asshole.
Be so good.
Oh. The only one you get to name is the Avatar, and the Avatar can't die, so.
Well, he can, but then you lose the mission.
Exactly.
Obviously a flawed design for what I want to do.
Which means instead you're going to end up with the Avatar becoming incredibly powerful because that's what they do. And then you're going to have to live with a world where I'm fucking tanks and just wreck house. Congratulations, Sean.
Going to happen.
Your fantasy made real.
The latest game in the Fire Emblem series. No sale.
There you go.
To me, it did look extremely similar to Awakening. They're saying the structure of the plot will be different because you'll have these big decisions that influence things. And then also they brought in a new guy, a comic book writer to write the story for it. So it could end up, I'd say the artwork has a somewhat different feel to it. Some of the environments I saw and some of the character designs seem slightly different. I guess the characters have feet now, so that'll make a lot of people happy who wanted to nitpick over that. But it seems like, hey, that Fire Emblem game was really successful. We should make another one as possible.
I've basically been saying that was going to happen for like a year now. They're going to make another one real quick because it sold a fuck ton of copies. Yeah, I mean, it's
good to see.
It was the most predictable outcome for that game. Now, I will say, when it started, that opening cinematic they played, when it started, I immediately went, oh shit, Fire Emblem Shin Megami Tensei is real. And then they showed 3DS, because I was like, fucking damn it! God damn it, Nintendo!
Yeah. So. I don't understand. Well, I guess I can understand. The Wii U is not very popular, and maybe this game is never coming out, but
game never existed. I mean, maybe this game was literally a contract.
Sure, yeah, well, there must have been the germ of an idea somewhere, because they had I can't remember if they had the promotion at the same time as they announced it, like the one where if you bought Fire Emblem Awakening and Shin Megami Tensei 4, you would get like $20 eShop credit.
Yeah, that was about the same time. But I mean, in no small part, this was pre-Sega purchase of Atlas. I mean, this was before Intelligent Systems completely blew up. Well, so they had just blown up Fire Emblem Awakening. I mean, it had just gone completely thermonuclear on them. So they're like, okay, we need to put another Fire Emblem game out fast.
Mm.
And we need it on Wii U.
And
so they announced that thing probably as soon as the ink dried on the contract.
Yeah, I there's a big open question as to whether that game is still in development. I was surprised to see the next 3DS Fire Emblem game shown before Codename Steam is out, because Intelligent Systems is finishing up Codename Steam right now. I mean, they're probably very close to being done on it because it's coming out pretty soon. Mm-hmm. In March, earlier than I was expecting. Yeah. But I guess that shows you just how large that studio is, or how
they've got two teams. I mean, they
can run multiple. But if they've got two teams and one's been doing Codename Steam and the other's doing this Fire Emblem sequel, who's working on the Wii U game?
Well, in theory,
maybe
Atlas,
nobody.
Atlas would be working on it, but practice. Eh.
Yeah.
This Fire Emblem game is coming out then, like theoretically, this year, like in the first part of the year,
2015. 2015.
I don't think. Did they say 2015?
That's all they said.
Okay. I would guess late, but we'll see. I don't think you'd want to release it too close to Codename Steam.
No,
even
and
if you could.
I mean, even though they're fairly different games, there is this. I would guess that they probably want to drop that thing towards the end of the year anyway, just because they want to give. They've got a decent number of stuff coming out on 3DS,
and that would be a big like holiday release for the platform. Which we don't know if they have anything otherwise for it at the end of the year. I mean, we'll find out at E3, I guess. But for now, this is really the first potentially late 2015 game announced for 3DS. It's the only one we know of. Everything else is coming out really soon.
I will say that there is some. If you get into the character design stuff, there does appear to be some. A little bit more like Eastern influence on character models and stuff. So I guess that's probably influence of the comic writer. I meant to go look up the stuff that he had done before the show, but I didn't get around to it because I got home late. But, they said the name in the Japanese one as well. So presumably it's a name people know. So I guess the guy's probably somewhat famous. So presumably he can write a story better than Intelligent Systems. Although Awakening story is not terrible, but it's not, It's not going to win any awards.
No, I thought it was pretty good.
You kill
a
dragon.
I like the story.
That's the story of Awakening. There's a dragon. You should fucking kill that guy.
Total spoilers right there.
There's a lot of stuff that happens
along the way. That's been the story of like 9 Fire Emblem games at this point. Hey, there's a dragon you really need to kill.
I don't have to play any of them now.
You don't. I mean, you don't have to. I mean, I would strongly advise you go play Shadow Dragon, the highlight of the Fire Emblem series.
So can we jump at any item on the list that we have here? Because
absolutely, please.
Mario versus DK, Tipping Stars is crossed by
Tipping Stars.
That's a cute name, but mostly I'm interested.
That name
in,
makes me want to vomit.
Yeah, it's like it's like a strip club regular.
You know what? You know what, John? I'm glad that you took some time to make that come out, because if you just immediately said it, I would have gone, John.
I was trying to figure out the right term.
It's like me, basically, is what John's saying. John's like, yeah, it's like me. That's
so either you like those games or you don't, but it is interesting that the titles cross by. And what's mostly interesting to me is the way that they're doing it, because, well, that depends if... you know, Reggie or whoever phrased it correctly, but they said that when you buy one version, the Wii U or the 3DS version, you get a code for the other version. Now, like, is that code tied to your account, or is it just kind of like the demo codes that we got from Tomodachi Life and things like that? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. But nobody knows.
I don't think there are codes tied to your account. I don't even think.
Not until you use them.
Yeah, I don't think those. Otherwise,
they would be.
The system support
they'd
that
just,
even.
Right.
They would just give it to you then. They just
so
say,
you
now
could
it's on your
potentially,
account.
Basically, you get two copies of the game when you buy it. You could totally give one of them to somebody else, and they'll be playing it on the other platform. But since they're compatible, you know, it's a great deal. I think it's a good way to sell a game that, you know, that game might have had limited appeal otherwise. I mean, it may still have limited appeal. I don't know. I think it looks, I played a little bit at E3 on Wii U. And I thought it was fun, but like all the Mario versus DK games, it's not going to set your hair on fire. I mean,
it's a Mario
kinda,
versus DK game. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, I do like that they're all different. You know, the mechanics are always a little bit different. The art style is always kind of the same, but you know, the level editing stuff and I like incentivizing people to make good levels, and I kind of hope that gets translated into Mario Maker. I bet it will.
Right.
So I'm excited about that. I mean, you know, when people like your level, they can tip you with these stars that you can use to unlock things. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty cool. And they said they've integrated Miiverse into the game for sharing levels, which we saw in something. That's been done before, I think.
Yeah. I mean, there have been games.
They've done the replays and NES Remix. Yeah, Pushmo does it. You're right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and the whole, like, code sharing thing kind of makes me wonder if it's a prelude to the Nintendo account being created.
Probably not.
You know, like your stuff being tied.
I think
to
it's
an
more of a, it's more of an acknowledgement that they wish they had done that right in the first place.
I would argue it's probably more of an acknowledgement of this game is really not going to sell that well.
Well, I think they also want to see exactly how much pickup. I'm sure they want to see how many times that people actually use the concept, actually go through it.
You know, John?
Because you need a lot of copies of that game out there if you're going to have this editing and sharing and tipping system really work properly.
Right. Yeah. They may be viewing this game entirely as a test of some of the concept stuff they're going to do into freaking Mario Maker.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like an experiment across the board, really, both with the two code model and also with the whole star kind of tipping sort of as currency kind of thing.
Yeah, it's just more weird experimentation from Nintendo, and I always enjoy that. I'm much more interested in that game than I was before, and you know the existence of a 3DS version was entirely new, that had never been shown before. So, you know, it's kind of cool to see them handle it that way. By the way, I put out a on our new RFN Twitter account, which I'll plug at the end of the show. I put out the call for people to. Let us know if there was anything in particular from the direct that they wanted us to talk about. Our friend TYP, who was also a recent addition to Twitter, said he was expecting at least an hour of Xenoblade X
discussion. Another trailer where they walk around to atmospheric music. For fuck's sake!
Yeah, I mean that game still looks amazing, but yep. we didn't really see anything.
They're walking in the same places they walked before.
Right. There was no battle this time. I thought that was interesting. No numbers on the screen.
So the last trailer they had of walking, there was that weird scene where they like jumped through like a suburban neighborhood. Like, all right, you know, you're getting fucking weird on me. Okay, they're just like, yeah, let's just walk around.
Well, they weren't just walking around, they were jumping, and I guess the jumping animation was an improvement over Xenoblade.
Oh, yes.
The jumping animation in Xenoblade was fucking amazing. It looked like they were doing jackknife dives off diving boards. I mean, every single time. It was beautiful.
Now, in this one, apparently you can just jump right off a cliff to your death, which I thought was pretty cool.
Well, you could do that before.
I know. I'm just saying, in this one, I thought it was funny. The one scene is just, it's like, I guess the point of it was to just prove like how big the game environment is. Where they're on this really high, really, really high cliff, and the guy just jumps off and was like, okay,
and
all right.
He was going to land in water. He was going to be okay.
Oh.
Don't worry.
I mean, I used to do that in the game. I would find a checkpoint at the very top of a cliff and then just jump off and see how long it took to fall.
And
I mean,
the game rewards you for doing that.
Yeah.
You get achievements that give you experience points, and you find new places, and that also gives you experience.
Remember, kids, jump off high cliffs.
Do it. Do it. And Riot. Riot over Amiibos as well.
Stop listening to this show. Find the highest thing you can climb up and just jump off.
You're not getting that Marth Amiibo, Riot. Turn over a car, set it on fire.
Oh, hold on. I want to talk about the Marth Amiibo real fast.
Oh, God.
Because
I was laughing. No.
So I want to put a little context here. It iced like fucking crazy the night before. So I was outside trying to get my card. Like, I couldn't even get the scraper under the ice. It was that kind of ice storm. Mm-hmm. So I just had to let it heat up enough I could get the scraper. So I was just sitting in my car while it heated up. And I was watching on my phone, and they announced the, don't worry. We'll have more Marth Amiibo, and I just started laughing hysterically.
And your laugh pierced through the ice and freed your shattered from its encasement.
Ice for a mile around.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, if you paid a ton of money for Marth Amiibo, think, well, they're never going to re-release these. You're a goddamn idiot.
I'm always happy for scalpers to get screwed over. So
you are borderline. Hey, let's not release the regular new 3DS in a region level idiot.
Yeah. Well, and of course, there's also the Super Mario line of Amiibos, which in addition to adding Captain Toad for the first time, it means they're essentially reprinting, Mario, Peach, Bowser, Luigi, Wario in different poses, which
in Pog form.
We kind of expected to, I mean, they're the same size and everything, but we kind of expected something like this, but it was good to see that. And I think it hopefully will give people some hope that even if you missed out on one of these that's already basically gone, even aside from Marth, I mean, I think they're reprinting the Smash Brothers Marth Amiibo. But in the future, maybe there's a Fire Emblem series of Amiibo, and there's a new version of Marth and a new version of all these guys.
I was fairly surprised to see that they included Amiibo in the code name, or Amiibo for the Fire Emblem characters in code names deemed that deeply. So when you drop them in there, they become characters you can control for that level.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's probably the best thing I've seen from Amiibo.
I'm a little worried though that if you do that, you're going to lose the opportunity to gain experience for your characters though. So, I mean, because that would be an intelligent systems way to go, hey, did you overuse the Amiibo? Gotcha.
We didn't tell you about it, but yeah, we gotcha.
Remember, they will always give you a crutch at the beginning of the game that if you use it at the end, they're like, you got screwed, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Frederick's really strong.
They really didn't talk about the kind of the Amiibo adapter for the current 3DS at all.
Say it was probably just more an issue of muddying the water discussing the new 3DS.
I think it takes away from the appeal of the new system. I mean, I do think that thing will come out, but I don't think they'll make a huge deal about it.
It'll be one
of those things. If you really want one, you'll be able to find it, but it conflicts with their message of the new 3DS has all these amazing features that you really want to get. So,
well, and you know, the only way they could have really done that message correctly would be to, they did a little bit when they showed the Circle Pad Pro on a 3DS next to the new 3DS with the nub, would be to have shown the station.
Not to scale, by the way.
Yeah. Would have been to show the station, one of the, you know, the Circle Pad Pros, a regular, like an XL 3DS next to just the new 3DS. Go, oh, this is built in already. Don't worry about it.
The full Frankenstein 3DS, and then.
Even though you wouldn't have been able to use it anyway, because the
also
Circle
like
Pad
a big
Pro
head
uses,
gimbal to keep it in the sweet spot, no matter how you move your head around.
Like, just I mean, they could have been really goofy about it and done something, but yeah, it'll come out because they want to sell Amiibos.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It'll come out. It'll come out. There's also so few 3DS games so far that are announced for Amiibo. I think.
Well, because there was no reason to announce them. I mean,
right. I think as you get to a critical mass with 3DS games that support that stuff, then it'll be much more clear that thing is available if you don't have the new system.
I want to talk about the Bamco stuff real quick, since we can kind of parlay into that.
Sure.
So they're releasing the remake of their 3DS Ace Combat game, which is itself a remake of Ace Combat 2, because fucking Namco Bandai. But this one supports the Amiibo. You can dock an Amiibo and get skins for your jets. Which, you know, I mean, they've had Idolmaster jets in Ace Combat games before, so I mean, this isn't even remotely in the same territory, as fucking crazy as that shit. But that looks really, I mean, it looks like they put a lot of work into that, but I was more interested when they had, Katsuhiro Harada come on, because that dude's intense as shit. Like, self-facing in a way, but like, basically he gets on there and says, "We have a game coming exclusively to Wii U. I can't tell you anything about it." And then they would zoom in on his lips and go, "I can't tell you anything about it." They zoom back out, and it was the fucking strangest thing I've ever seen in my life.
The presentation was kind of amazing, actually.
And it was I've seen Katsuhiro Harada and Ono, when they were promoting Street Fighter X Tekken, have a fight in the offices of Namco Bandai and just wreck the place as a promotional video. And that wasn't as weird as this. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it was super, super serious.
But
absurd at the same time.
Yeah, like that's what he does. Like he's wearing sunglasses indoors. I mean, this is the kind of shit he does. But all they showed of this game, this four-player online action game that it has free-to-play elements, apparently, all they showed of the characters was their mouth.
Yeah, their lips.
That's the only here's thing they showed of the game.
Here's the lips of four of the characters. Actually, we don't even know if they were the characters from the game. They were just,
it could just be characters.
Four pairs of lips. We don't even know.
But what's worse about this is I'm so fucking excited for this, because it's like, all right, you fucking assholes, what have you done? Like, I look at this thing and I go, this is the dumbest announcement I've ever seen. I'm so on board.
Also, it sounds like some kind of free to play thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, it is.
At least like a free demo that rolls into the full game, maybe.
Yeah. I mean,
it has to be some kind of unique business model, because they thought we could make this work on the Wii U.
Sort of like maybe a free-to-play.
As an exclusive.
Extremely weird. Like, yeah. I kind of wonder what their other free-to-play experiment,
I don't know.
How it fared, the Steel Diver Subwars.
I don't know. I mean, you can go like Rusty's. That's another free-to-play game. I mean, there is a lot of stuff Nintendo's been playing with here. I'm surprised to see another company come in and do it, unless Nintendo's footing the bill to some extent. But, I mean, the fact that they've got Harada out front on this is kind of a big deal, because that's really Namco Bandai's biggest face at this point. So, I don't know. I mean, it's weird. This is a weird thing they've done. I'm interested in, like, if they had announced that, just played it straight, I probably wouldn't be anywhere near, like, the VDev shooter on 3DS.
Oh, yeah. Ironfall.
Yeah, like, they played that totally seriously. Couldn't be less interested. They just said, fuck it, we're gonna go nuts. And
actually,
I want to
hear what John thought of Ironfall.
Ironfall looks interesting. I just wonder about whether it's just going to be, I'm assuming it's just a single player campaign and no multiplayer, or maybe only local multiplayer.
I thought it was online multiplayer.
I didn't quite catch that from it.
I didn't either, but
maybe
it would make sense if they're doing it. I think it looks really nice.
It looks very good.
It looks like kind of like Gears of War, like a cover based shooter.
It sure does.
Yeah,
and to hear, I mean, I'm surprised to hear that it runs at 60 frames per second when you can go for a cinematic 24.
Yeah, I mean, I'm intrigued by it. It looks interesting.
That's,
you know,
good troll.
Yeah,
you know. I appreciated it.
Who is VDev?
They made Cop the Recruit, which if you recall, I talked about. They made Head Gold. Yeah,
oh,
and if
God.
You recall,
Head Gold.
And if you recall, I remember saying on the show, "Wow, this game looks really good for the DS." I don't have anything else to say about it, but it looks really good for the DS.
Oh, wow, it's like it's all come full circle right here.
Yeah, I mean, like I saw the name and went, "Are you fucking kidding me? Is this where we're fucking at now?" Because like
Ironfall, like, Head Gold. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to say about it.
I mean, I'm in. I'm in now. Like you guys have you've done it. I'm
John
ready
was
to go,
mining
but,
for puns there.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something there. I don't know what.
So I will say that. I want to say VDev is Eastern European. Maybe not. Maybe they're Spanish. No, I'm wrong already. France and Canada. Okay. There we go.
Oh, well.
I think one of the people is, yep. Yeah, I know. I think one of the people involved is Eastern European. That was why I thought that. But like, they've shown that they can pump out stuff from Nintendo handhelds. Go nuts. I mean, sure. But, I mean, if they had announced it just showing the lips of the characters, I'd have been way more on board. I'd have been 100% there.
Am I the only one who had like a terrifying moment of thinking, like seriously thinking about buying Hyrule Warriors just so I could play as Tingle?
I already own it, so.
I kind of considered it.
No way, never. Never.
Hold on, I was like,
get Tingle off my screen. Get him out
John
of here.
John is Tingle proof. You can't tingle John Lindemann.
Well, no, because John
you cannot
John has,
tingle me.
John has lived the tingle. I mean, he wears tights.
I'm living tingle free over here. Tingle free.
Hey, John, how are those green tights fitting you?
I'm living tingle free, buddy. Never felt better.
Six weeks and no tingle.
No tingle. Nothing.
My sponsor is very proud of me.
I hear he's got a particularly hairy chest.
So to me, Tingle not being in that game, because remember there was that new story that came out about 2 weeks ago, like, originally Tingle was going to be in this game. He makes so much fucking sense in the stupidity of what they are doing in that game.
Exactly. That I will admit, yes.
Yeah. Like, that game is, I mean, I'm the only one here who's played it end to end. That game is dumb as shit. I mean, it's the dumbest game I've played this year. I mean, but in just amazing, stupid, glorious ways. So like, he makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I agree.
I'm a little disappointed though, because he's not really going to integrate into the story. He's just going to be another character you can throw on top of it. Because they've had some DLC characters already. Mm-hmm. Like, I want him to have soliloquies, because that's where this game becomes real stupid. When you've got like Midna having a soliloquy about the joy of beating things up. It's like, yeah, Tingle here would have made this better.
I feel like I'm pretty sure this is the first time Tingle has ever been playable in a North American release. Because his two DS games were not released here.
Well, no. Technically, I mean, you could use the Tingle Tuner in Wind Waker control him, but you didn't really see him. Like, you just saw a map on your GBA.
You saw a logo of his face. I think it counts.
Did you? I don't even remember that.
Mm-hmm. That was how you knew where you were. There was his face floated around.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, it's... I'm happy he's... I mean, I don't know if I'm going to buy it, but... I mean, so to be fair,
if I already had Hyrule Warriors, I don't think there's any question about
that
about
game has a ton of DLC.
And you get Young Link with the Fierce Deity Mask. That's pretty cool too.
It should be like, once you put on the Fierce Deity Mask, you just swing a sword one time and everything on the screen dies. Because that's roughly the experience you're going for. I mean, this game has a ton of DLC already. I mean, to the point you're just like, okay, you can stop now. But this is what they do when they make a Dynasty Warriors game, so I guess we should deal with it. I just wish you had been there so we could get him with the plot, because,
Maybe next time. Maybe in Hyrule Warriors 2.
Oh, my God.
You know, Tingle Tangle.
Hyrule Warriors 2, the tingling.
Yeah. It never ends. Am I the only one who is, and this, I'm not joking around this time, I'm seriously thinking maybe I will buy Puzzle and Dragons. Because
you know what? So
you get that combo pack, and it seems like a hell of a lot of game.
So I spoke to Don and, you know, a friend of our show, Saren, who both played Puzzle Dragons Z, which came out in Japan last year. And they both loved it. They thought it was a great game. Mm-hmm. They thought
it sold really well in Japan.
It's Puzzle Dragons.
But it sold really well in a series that people expect to be free to play.
Sure.
And they put a version of it for $50 on 3DS, and people snapped it up like crazy.
They made it a big giant RPG too. It's not just Three Bunch Puzzles.
It's not a port. It's a new game, but still, I mean, it's something. It's like if you made a 3DS version of Farmville and people paid $50 for it. There might be something to that thing.
It's kind of like Puzzle Quest in some ways, but even bigger.
Exactly.
But. I was surprised when they announced the Mario game, because I thought, oh, maybe they're not going to bring Z over after all. Because they had said they were going to do it, and Gung Ho had said they were going to do it. And I thought, okay, well, they're not going to do it now because they've announced this Mario one, and Nintendo will just go, fuck that, we're bringing over the Mario one. Mm-hmm. I was shocked to hear they two-packed it in the West.
It's pretty awesome.
That
is the way to introduce this franchise to a new region.
Because I was thinking with the Mario one, okay, they'll release it online sales in the eShop and they'll for $20.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, what if they bayer this one? They say you can buy it. You can buy the two games separately if you want. on the eShop.
Well, I do hope that they do that because I'm not really that interesting.
I bet they won't. I bet they want you to buy the whole fucking thing.
I think they would really limit the number of people.
But it's going to be hard though, because in beta it was two separate discs. I mean, you're really buying two games. Like, they were built separately. Like, there was no cross interconnectivity between those two games. So.
Sure, but on the eShop, they don't have to bundle them.
Well, but they'd have to make a separate build of the game that's got two games versus one and lot check that. I mean, they might do it, but I was thinking about it, and I think they'll probably just end up doing the whole thing. I mean, it's got Mario's face on it. It's Puzzle and Dragon. They'll make all their money in Japan they need to make. Anything they make in the West is gravy. I mean, that game will sell. I mean, that's Iwata just bought a yacht. Like, he doesn't live on the water, but he bought a yacht anyway. Cause he just wants to have one.
He's putting wheels on it. He's going to drive it around Kyoto.
Yeah. He bought it like Mikhail Prokhorov, and he says, "Oh, I have a $50 million yacht. I don't know where in the world it is right now." I mean, he's just going to, I was joking that they said, my investors want me to make a mobile game. Fine. I will. And I'll put it on 3DS. Fuck you. But like, they combined them outside Japan. That's really smart. I don't know what they're doing in Japan. Are they going to release this game in Japan as a $40 game? Or 4,000 yen? With just Puzzle and Dragon Mario Edition?
I mean, at this point, they're just trolling, so why not?
I mean, I guess because they've already gotten all the blood out of Puzzle Dragon Z. They could just get away with it.
Right.
In this one case, we're going to come out way more ahead of our counterparts in Japan.
So, can we talk about the shy sea anemone in Splatoon?
What? Yes. Yes.
There is a discussion to be had there.
Because is there really?
Yeah, she's pretty awesome. About Splatoon. Yeah,
she's got a little clownfish in her hair. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's looking pretty interesting in terms of the way you customize your character. Typical kind of, but they don't seem to be cutting any corners in terms of giving people what the typical first-person shooter gives them. So
we'd kind of concluded that was what was going on at E3 because how much detail there were in the characters. You could see some elements that were reused between characters. I was kind of getting the feeling these were custom characters, but
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Getting it confirmed is nice.
Yeah.
Right. So James and Johnny, I guess, like, you both played the demo, and yeah. I've seen some people on Twitter going like, oh, this looks good, but I'm not sure if it's going to be like, it's going to feel good as a shooter because Nintendo doesn't really make those. So can you confirm?
It feels weird.
They really try.
We only got, 10 minutes on it in cycles. I mean, I probably played it for about an hour over the course of the week.
Right.
I mean, it feels weird because they were having us play it with the motion control gamepad. So there's certainly an element of this is something that I'm going to have to get used to. But I mean, they're not going to make you do the motion control gamepad thing. If they do, they're crazy. I mean, it worked. It wasn't that it didn't work. It just felt different. I mean, if the question is, does it play well? I don't know that we had enough time in hand because it feels so very different to say definitively like, yeah, this plays great.
Right.
Yeah, I'm really curious. I'd like to get some advanced hands-on with this thing just out of curiosity. I'm very curious about it.
I didn't dislike playing it. I mean, I went back and played it five or six times. I brought people that I knew that I met at E3 to that booth and said, no, really. I know you've played Smash four or five times. You need to play this. because there is,
I mean,
how it plays, I'm still not there, but there is something undeniably enjoyable about this game.
Does it play more like an action platformer put into that sort of third-person shooter perspective? Or does it play more like a kind of first-person shooter-ish?
Well, it's third-person.
You know? Yeah, it's third-person, but, is it more platformy? You know?
Well, I mean, keep in mind, your goal isn't to hunt people down. Your goal is to cover territory. So it plays a little bit... It felt like there was a couple different ways you could play the game well.
Yeah.
And some of it was just, skulking around corners and nailing people when they come around. Some of it was just going guns blazing like you're playing, like you're playing a MOBA. And you're just going to like, I'm just going to run straight into this and see what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, how you wanted to do this, there was a decent amount of flexibility there. And I was struggling to find an approach that worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily because there isn't one out there, just because... I was still trying to get used to what I was doing.
Sure.
Yeah.
And the power-ups, I would imagine they'll be balanced a little bit more. Like, they were – if you got the roller in that, you were just – or the paint bazooka, you were just wrecking house. Mm-hmm. So There was a lot of just getting used to that game going on.
They showed a few more of those items, like you've got some sort of shower or screen.
They've shown a couple as the different trailers have come out. Mm-hmm. I assume there'll be quite a few, and it's, you know, if at the time there was only usually one on screen and that person was just going bananas on people.
I mean, how did they get added? Are there set spawn points for guns, or
I believe you filled up a gauge based on your efficacy coloring the land, and once you filled it up, you got it.
Okay, mm-hmm. So that's your special weapon, right?
Yeah,
and you can choose that, right?
And now they've got two weapons or three weapons really in the trailer. Before it was just your generic your super soaker and your special weapon. They've added the secondary weapon now too. So
and from the phrasing when they were describing the game, it sounded like you choose your special weapon.
Yeah.
For like it's your custom gear basically.
Yeah.
It's part of your custom gear.
Right, and that's different from the demo. Can we talk a little bit about stuff that got announced in Japan real quick?
Yeah, you should. Yeah, I don't even know all those details.
So they announced a Rhythm Heaven game for 3DS.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's coming over here. So people were starting to get nervous about it. They just haven't announced it yet. I mean, there was so much 3DS stuff. It was already kind of 3DS heavy.
The Rhythm Heaven game, when it comes over here, could easily be a download only game because Rhythm Heaven Fever on Wii was a terrible seller. I do think they'll bring this one out, but
they'll bring it out.
With like the most profitable, least risky way, which would be an eShop, especially on 3DS. You can get away with that so easily.
Sure. I mean, that game is going to come out here. They gave themselves 45 minutes. They had to intro the new 3DS. They didn't have to do that in Japan, so they could use that time to show some other stuff, and that's fine.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about a game that they've shown a couple times at Nintendo Direct in Japan, and we still haven't heard anything about it. And that was has anybody here actually watched the Japanese one?
No, I've not. I was proud of myself for watching the American one.
So there's a 3DS game that they've shown a few times now, it's an RPG called Legend of Legacy, which is a terrible name.
I know. It's like a name made in a name generator.
But it's almost as bad as Bravely Default.
Oh, it's worse. I mean, it's Legend of Legacy. It's thing of another word for that same thing.
It's Legend of Legend or Legacy of Legacy, basically.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fucking unbelievably terrible name. That actually comes out next week, I think, in Japan, made by some former Square Enix and Level 5 people. It looks gorgeous. It looks amazingly gorgeous. And I hope we get that game. Nintendo, if you are interested in 3DS RPGs, you should probably go watch video of this game and try to cause some buzz around it, because this game looks really gorgeous, and this is the kind of game that Nintendo would pick up and publish themselves, because I doubt Furyu is going to go ahead and put together a North American team to release this game.
You know, I was a little bit surprised that we didn't hear about more RPGs on this thing, because this was, overall, I would say, it was a fairly 3DS heavy mm-hmm. Nintendo Direct for North America. And you could argue Fire Emblem is an RPG, but when you consider the relative success of Bravely Default in America mm-hmm. last year, I mean, it sold very well, like greatly surpassed expectations. And Nintendo published that game. They handled the localization, I believe, for it.
But we're a ways out for that game here, though.
Well, but Bravely Second, you mean?
Yeah. That's coming out in Japan. I want to say soon.
We don't have to be a ways out. It really depends on when they started localizing it. But, you know, there's that. Of course, you've still got Dragon Quest VII, which I really hope still comes out. I'm kind of clinging to a shred there because it's been out for a long time in Japan. But I would really love to see that come out. And just, you know, when we heard Nintendo say they were going to start localizing Japanese games that the third party publishers did not want to release, I didn't really see a whole lot of that, you know, and Bravely Default was apparently successful for them. So I'm just curious, where's the follow-up to that initiative? Where's more of that?
Yeah, like publishers, I don't understand. Like I do understand that localizing an RPG is a big undertaking and it's not cheap, but publishers like Nintendo or Konami, like they seem to be super surprised when they realize, oh wait, there's a demand for this kind of game. And
let me put this, there's a Final Fantasy game that just came out on 3DS in Japan, and we haven't heard a word about it.
Final Fantasy Explorers, and it's
And Suikoden 2 came out.
That game is Japanese as fuck, by the way. Right. Final Fantasy Explorers.
Like, after, like, a decade of people asking, Suikoden 2 came out on the PSN, and it became the number one seller in December. Or maybe, like, number two? Number one?
Yeah.
Like, before Destiny.
Yeah. Suikoden 1 was number two. Suikoden 2 is number one.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. So, yeah, like, crazy popular, and it's just a shock to these people. And how can it still be shocking, like, after Bravely Default's success? And
well, I mean, Bravely Default has some other things going for it that games like this don't have. I mean, it has a pedigree going for it. It was, and it there, it had picked up this meme as being sort of the redeemer of what Final Fantasy games used to be.
Okay, but yeah, Dragon Quest doesn't have a pedigree. Final
not
Fantasy Explorers
here, not
doesn't
like
have
that.
A pedigree.
Not like that.
Not like Bravely Default.
No, because Bravely Default was de facto wearing the Final Fantasy mantle at that point.
Okay,
except that it's not even called Final Fantasy.
Final Fantasy Explorers doesn't play like a Final Fantasy game, though. Final Fantasy Explorers plays like fucking Monster Hunter.
So? It's called Final Fantasy. Bring it
out. That's the problem. That's the problem. That's what poisoned the Final Fantasy name for Square Enix. They put out everything with fucking Final Fantasy on it, and they put out fucking Lightning Returns. Man, fuck Lightning Returns.
All right. All right.
That's the problem. The problem is they put the name on too much shit. They devalued the name.
Hasn't stopped Nintendo with any of their other franchises.
Yeah, but their games are actually good. Stop fucking Lightning Returns. It's not fucking hallway like walk of Final Fantasy 13.
All right. So, like, the Final Fantasy name is not what it once was, but I can't believe that it doesn't have a certain cachet with RPG
fans. The
Bravely
Default name isn't
Bravely
what
Default
it once
is
was.
Ridiculous.
But Bravely Default... The point on Bravely Default is people who felt like the Final Fantasy franchise had left them behind were looking at that game going, oh.
Sure.
Oh, this
seems
is what
like
I
a
want.
Throwback. And it kind of is in some ways. But,
yeah, but
let's move on. I think there's one more topic that we absolutely have to talk about before we take this break and do our other feature this week. And that is Wii games being sold as downloads on the eShop for Wii U.
Nice. I was so happy to watch our... the Tenor World Report forums go like, why are these $20? And just completely losing their fucking shit.
Yeah.
I was dying. I've renamed the Funhouse because of it. It's great.
Right. Well, like, okay, so the first week that they come out, they're $10 and then they're $20. I do think it's a little bit pricey just because they're ubiquitous. Like, you go to a game store and you're going to find most of these games, except for something like Metroid Prime Trilogy, which everyone is very thankful that it's coming out. And
it's pretty awesome that they're doing that. I mean, that's three games that you're going to get for $10. Three amazing games for $10.
Here's the thing. With Galaxy 2, so, you know, you say you can go to a store and buy them, but GameStop's really cut back on their Wii selection. I mean, you can buy them online, but you don't know what you're going to get. You get some scratched up disc and a Dumb and Dumberer DVD case somebody's mailed to you.
Galaxy 2 is like a Nintendo Select, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
I mean, they did a reprint. You can probably buy a refurbished copy of it off Nintendo's web store now. Mm-hmm. It's not a game that's hard to get.
It's not about the difficulty of getting it. It's about the convenience.
Yeah, having it on your home menu, not having to go into Wii mode, not having to dig out a disc, that is clearly the main appeal here. I mean,
just being able to say, I would like to play Galaxy 2 right now. There it is in the eShop. Bang, I have it now.
Mm-hmm. Right. Of course, I hope people realize you still have to have a Wii remote and nunchuck to play that game.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because, in fact, that goes for all three of these.
Now people are going to have to buy something extra. Holy shit.
Right. they mention that if the game originally supported the classic controller on Wii, you'll be able to play it on your gamepad, which is really interesting that they've been able to
here we go.
They've been able to kind of retrofit that in there. But I think it's interesting to note that I don't believe Punch-Out supports the classic controller.
Nope.
I know Galaxy 2 doesn't, and I know Metroid Prime Trilogy doesn't. So
right,
none of the first
games
two games they have support that. So you really are getting very direct ports, including the having to be played with the original controller.
I don't even know their ports. I think it's just they found a way to make the Wii U just launch those things like it's running in Wii mode. I think
it is running in Wii mode, though.
Yeah, so all they've really done is find a way to hack their menu and then put the fucking ISOs up on the eShop.
Yeah,
I mean,
which we've said for years they should do. And I'm really glad that they've done it.
Does this give us hope that maybe finally they're going to release sell GBA games on the eShop on the 3DS? Or
and it, well, more to the point, DS would be the more direct.
Well, let's not shoot for the moon when we haven't even gotten off the ground yet.
Yeah,
I mean, they're still oh my god, Game Boy, fuck you, Nintendo.
Yeah, but I mean, it's good. I mean, it is a fair point that there aren't very many Wii games that are actually rare. It's a pretty short list of Wii games that are like actually desirable and hard to get.
So, but here's the thing:
Metroid Prime Trilogy is way up on the list, even though that, of course, is a re-release of other stuff. The other one would be Xenoblade, which there's no way in hell
no
they're going to release
way.
On this system because
nope.
they want to sell it to you on
so
the new 3DS.
I was interested to see that. What is it in the EU? They were showing Pandora's Tower and Sin and Punishment Star Successor.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, those both seem like really good candidates for
this
service.
So here's the thing, and this is an important little thing I'm looking at here, is that there are a lot of third-party Wii games. And
true.
Maybe this is Nintendo's way of saying, hey, you can come back in.
Interesting.
But they had to show their stuff first because they're the ones out there.
Right.
Madden 12, right there.
Madden 12 built for Wii, released on the eShop as a Wii U download. Yeah, fuck that.
The return of Carnival Games is coming back, baby.
Oh, Carnival yes. Games 2!
Oh,
Electric,
man.
Fuck you!
Sometime I'll tell you guys about playing Carnival Games with my parents over this past Christmas break. That was an interesting experience. It was very meta. The whole time I was like, I can't believe I'm doing this.
I mean, I watched a PR rep have a heat stroke while demoing Carnival Games 2. Next to GoldenEye. I mean, it was fucking unbelievable.
GoldenEye would be a fantastic
well, here's the
release
problem, though.
For this service.
All these games have the online stuff, that's gone now.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean,
but GoldenEye still has a great local multiplayer game,
Curious, I'm curious how they would feel about releasing those games.
Right, because it's not like they can program in like a big red banner that says, not available. It's
right.
just you're going to go to it and you get an error code, and nobody wants to see that. And to that, all I can say is, well, Nintendo, maybe you shouldn't have gone with GameSpy in the first place. Maybe you should have run your own fucking online service in the first place, so this would never happen.
Well, nobody should ever go with GameSpy.
Well, like, I don't even know.
No one's going to.
They don't. But no one ever should have to begin with, because it's just it's fucking GameSpy. I don't even know
shit. It would be interesting if they actually kind of found a way to sort of emulate Nintendo Wi-Fi connection using their own servers. That just seems like way too – I'm sure it can be done. I just feel like that's way
too
much
effort.
It's
just too much
work. That's something Nintendo would never actually bother to do. So probably more likely it's just games that had like a significant online component just won't come out.
Right.
And that's too bad.
Which sucks.
You know? That's
like
too bad.
The last story has a big online mode. And I hope that doesn't affect that game.
Yes, although I never played it,
so
and that
I
was still my game
it.
Of the year when it came out. So,
I did
I mean,
play it. That online mode is cool.
It sounded cool, but you don't need to play that to have a fantastic time with the last story.
But I'm just worried that they don't want to have any game and they're like, Nintendo's selling you this game for $20 that you can't play part of.
And it has error codes in it. Yeah, I mean, it looks bad.
Yep.
You know, it really does. And on the subject of price, I mean, I really do think $20 is kind of ludicrous for a lot of these. I mean, you could say for Metroid Prime Trilogy, okay, it's really rare and it's a giant file that you're downloading.
Well,
it has three games in it. But
I would say
for a lot of these, it's just $20. You got to be kidding me.
I would say $20 is fine if it was Metroid Prime 1 and 3. Once they put 2 in there, they got to take $10 off that price because that game's fucking garbage.
Oh, James.
Hold on, let's make it so
that's
half
retroactive.
The game is just not fun to play.
I doubt you've ever played Metroid Prime 2.
Do you want me to go fucking get the game and just slam it against the microphone for 5 minutes?
You own it?
Yes!
Why did you buy it?
Because I thought maybe they figured it out this time. And said, nope, they made it worse. Good job, guys. You fucked it up.
Oh, my gosh. Well,
anyway.
It is, you know, I think the... Maybe this whole promotional thing they're doing where it's only $10 the first week it comes out, maybe they do that for every game they ever release on that service. And if that's the case, I'd be okay with that. Like, hey, if you're paying attention, you can get these for a good price. And if you're not, you probably don't care. You know, if you buy a Wii U a year from now and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I can buy Punch-Out on this thing, $20, you probably won't even bat an eye at it.
I mean, and it may be that they're screwing around with prices still and trying to figure it out. I mean, remember when the PlayStation...
I think the fair price for these games is $10.
I think it's game to game.
Period.
I think it's game to game. I think
it should be.
I mean, I would pay $15 for some Wii games. I own most of those games, but there are some that if I didn't know them, I'd say $15, I can deal with that.
Nah. Yeah, sure. I mean, it's not that Galaxy isn't worth $20. It's just that it can be had for much less than $20.
Sure, and there may be a couple that...
The market value is less than $20.
Well, the market value is less than a lot of... I mean, since when has that affected eShop prices?
Yeah, well, there you go.
Or really any online prices, really, for the most part.
Sure, I mean, I think you set the pay full price for Yaiba on PS3. So, I mean, fuck that. Yeah.
The weird thing for me thinking about this, my first thought was, oh my gosh, that's so great. I wonder, you know, what they're going to release. I'm so excited to see. And my second thought was, I'll never buy any of these because I already own every Wii game I could possibly have ever wanted. I was married to that system for 5 years. So,
yeah. I mean,
it's not for me, but I'm really glad it's out there for other people, especially stuff like, I mean, I own Metroid Prime Trilogy. If I didn't, I would be like shitting my pants over the opportunity to download that
game. I'm still going to buy it again, though. Everybody should
buy that game.
It's gonna be the third party things that if they can get them in there, that would make a difference. Those games that people were afterwards like, dude, you didn't buy that game? That game was fucking crazy.
Yeah, maybe like Boom Blocks and Deadly Creatures and, you know, some of that stuff. Mushroom Men, some of those like cult games that people kind of spoke about in hushed tones.
Yeah, those might be interesting. Escape from Bug Island.
Those seem like the least likely games to actually come out on the service, though.
Yeah, I'm crossing my fingers for Fragile.
That's the problem. Like they should.
Right, right. Yeah, Fragile.
Like, that game should absolutely be out there because you can't find copies of that game.
It's not going to be.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Conduit. I'm hoping.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. It comes down to a question of how hard is it to get the game from here is an ISO of the Wii game to it is now on the eShop. If it's super easy, if it's literally just here's the file, we're throwing it up there, and we have got this hack for the Wii that works, then every game that doesn't have some really hyper compelling reason, third party should be like, yeah, sure, we'll take this free money.
I wonder if they could get away with not having to recertify through ESRB and stuff like that, because these are all modern games. I mean, none of these games are more than a few years old.
They probably still have to submit the video.
You think? I mean, if it's the same file.
Because the ESRB standards have changed over the couple of years too, so they've changed some of their announcement codes and things like that, so they might have to recertify. But I mean, again, they probably still have the ESRB certification video they sent off the first time. Just resend it.
Right. You can say the content is exactly the same.
This is from the new system.
We haven't touched the file at all.
Yeah, I mean,
I just wonder because we've always heard that's kind of a bottleneck on Virtual Console a lot of times is, you know, getting the old licenses renewed and getting it rated by ESRB, but that's for stuff that is so old, you know, and these newer games seem like they should have fewer hoops to jump through.
Like, this way, if I am a major third party publisher, especially a Japanese one, that still has a working relationship with Nintendo. So let's say I'm Capcom. I am going through all of my Wii games I released and going, okay, I can do that one, 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 I can do that. I can't do Monster Hunter 4 or Monster Hunter Tri because I want to keep selling Monster Hunter 4. I can do that one, I can do that one, I can do that one. Done. And I'm just like, all right, these are the games I want to do. Nintendo, tell me when I can release them.
I can definitely see Sega jumping on this, you know, because they've been pretty good supporters of all these digital services that Nintendo has. And Sega put out a lot of good stuff on Wii. I mean, they had House of the Dead Overkill and things like that.
And they announced they're going to do a bunch.
Pretty well.
They announced doing a bunch of 3D classic Sega games again.
Exactly. Yeah. So I could see that happening. You know, you could put out Sonic Colors.
Yeah. I mean, just
stuff like that.
But yet they don't want to put out a decent Sonic game because then people will realize what the fuck they've been doing. I mean, really, if you're a third-party publisher...
On your weekly Sonic trolling, why don't we end the segment, James? We've got still a whole bunch of show left to do here. Well, everyone let us know what you thought of the Nintendo Direct, and we've still got... We couldn't even fit everything in this week, so we can talk about it more next time if you want. Let us know. Send us an email. I'll tell you the address later on if you don't already know it. But for now, stick around. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be doing our top five games of 2014.
Now playing, a sampling of the best new original content at NintendoWorldReport.com. First up this week, we have a hands-on preview of Codenamed STEAM.
That's the correct way to say it, James. Absolutely. Yep.
On 3DS by Aaron Kaluska. Aaron fulfills his dream that he's been talking about for years. Become Abraham Lincoln and save the world. He puts his stovepipe hat aside long enough to write up some in-depth thoughts on the newest title from Intelligent Systems. No comments? We're just going to roll right through?
Just keep rolling, just keep rolling. Like, you're on a roll. You've actually said about 15 words consecutively, so we're pretty good.
I just didn't want to step on your toes here. I mean, I thought maybe you had some commentary on you know, alternate history, or maybe Abraham Lincoln in space and a shooter that's an 8.5 Game of the Year candidate for online play?
Nope.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
Nope. We're good.
We also have a review of League of Heroes on 3DS by Don Koopman. Don makes his weekly appearance on Now Playing, this time taking a look at a game that surely is the product of a video game name generator. How does this name compete with Legend of Legacy? I can barely stand the suspense. I'm going to go ahead and say at least League of Heroes is like DC Comics tier. Like I mean, basically your Justice League.
Yeah.
But Legend of Legacy is just A of also A. It's just fucking synonym generator. Stop it. At least that's Japan. They have an excuse. They don't understand the language.
Mm-hmm. I know.
League of Heroes. League of... How about League of just useless people? Like this segment.
All right, on that note, we have a hands-on preview of Xenoblade Chronicles 3D for 3DS by Curtis Bonds. Curtis takes a look at the port of the Wii RPG and lets us know how the controls work on a handheld. Is it rain time? Or is this port only for a bunch of jokers? Read his preview to find out. And we have yet another hands-on preview. It's a hands-on preview sale here at Now Playing.
It's all hands-on. If you
everything
know what I mean.
Must go.
Get your hands on. Get a hand of this.
It's a hands-on preview of Ironfall Invasion for 3DS, again by Curtis Bonds.
Speaking of your video game name generator,
he's prolific, a prolific writer. If you're curious about how this gorgeous-looking third-person shooter plays, Curtis will give you that answer. However, he fails to address the larger question that we all have: where and when does somebody say, "Eat my bullets"?
Right here, right now.
Mm-hmm.
Eat. All this and less, much less, but also that content you might actually want to consume, so again, not this, is available for you right now at NintendoWorldReport.com.
Eat my bullets.
Welcome back, everyone. It's time for an annual tradition around here. We're going to do our top five Nintendo games of 2014. That title is more accurate than ever this past year, where there were very few third-party releases of note on either Wii U or 3DS.
For yourself. Speak for yourself.
You might hear about one or two. But before we get into our picks from 2014, and of course, we each have our own top five, so you'll hear about a lot of different games. You'll learn a lot about our individual tastes in games. But I thought it would be fun to recap quickly our list from last year. And we got some help on Twitter from our friends Austin and Donald and Dork. So thank you guys on short notice for doing a little bit of research for us. We didn't have time to look these up ahead of time, and I really appreciate the footwork. And so we'll go through and let's see. Guillaume's top five games were starting with number five, Lego City Undercover, Etrian Odyssey 4, Tokitori 2, Super Mario 3D World, and his number one game, Pikmin 3. James's... You stand by it, huh? James's list was number five, Rayman Legends, Project X Zone, Attack of the Friday Monsters, Fire Emblem Awakening, and Ace Attorney Dual Destinies. John Lindemann's list was number five, Gunman Clive, 3D Space Harrier, Earthbound, okay, Zelda A Link Between Worlds, and number one, Monster Hunter 3D Ultimate. Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate. Sorry, not 3D. And then my top five was number five, Runner 2. Future Legend of Rhythm Alien, I think is the subtitle. And then Rayman Legends, Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, Super Mario 3D World, and number one, Zelda A Link Between Worlds. So there you go. Some love for Zelda, some love for Mario. I think at the time, neither James nor John had actually played Super Mario 3D World.
Yeah, I played that game in February.
Would you guys, if you could go back, would you guys have put it on your list?
I probably would, yeah.
I would have slotted it in about five, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
That's the thing. I mean, I really enjoyed 3D Land, so I see no reason why I wouldn't really enjoy 3D World.
So. But you still haven't played it, have you?
No, I still haven't played it. It's like on my, it's on my shit. Two,
there's
it's
no
my
reason I would have enjoyed this if you could still get copies of it.
At some point, I will get it.
Okay. Yeah, I believe you. Yeah. I believe you. I think you'll enjoy
the
it.
The problem is, new games just keep coming out, goddammit.
Like, yeah, I mean, I look back at my list and realize I went...
You never stop, do they?
In February, they'll kind of do it for us. Like, I look at my list from last year and say, I went out there and just went like, oh, man, I'm going to get weird stuff in here because I really enjoyed this stuff because it was weird. And, you know, 3D World might have had a hard time getting through that wall of just insanity that I put together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you did have some pretty strange. Well, yeah, I almost put Attack of the Friday Monsters.
It's really
on
good.
I think I actually played it like right after we did that episode. I enjoyed that a lot.
Like that's the thing.
It might still be on sale if you. It's really good. You should get it if you haven't.
That's the thing. What burns me is that typically these Nintendo games, they don't follow my normal. See, normally if I don't get a game at launch, then I wait for it to drop, right? In
but
price.
Do that.
Nintendo games don't typically do that, so it's like,
yeah,
you know. So I tend
I
they
mean,
tend to get lost
some,
in the shuffle.
You can find
with me.
Some online discounts, but Nintendo themselves won't do it.
I need to just.
I'll
get,
say
like,
I made some effort this year to try to play the games I thought had a legitimate chance before we did this list.
Right,
and there were still probably a couple that I didn't really get to spend the time with that I would have liked. I put some effort in because I knew we were going to be doing this and I tried to prepare for it a little bit.
Yep.
It was tough. The past month for me has been, as you guys know, completely out of character. Just very hard for me to have like any kind of consistent gaming time. So it's been a challenge for me to catch up on some of these. But, anyway, let's get into our 2014 lists. So, James, actually, why don't you start with your number five?
I was having a real rough time with number five and number four.
Those are the hardest.
And six and seven, really.
Sometimes those are the hardest, yeah.
So when the clock stopped, number five, in the number five slot was Bravely Default. Which is funny because if it was just the first 30 hours of that game, that'd probably be like number three.
Yeah.
But like it does so much right. It's fascinating how it gets it wrong at the end. Like it's almost like a science experiment. You look at it, you think, how did they understand how to make this game this well, but not this one really important part? Like this part that you almost, I've never seen somebody screw that up before. I've seen games overstay their welcome, but not like that. Like that was,
yeah,
that was a monument to hubris to do that at the end of the game. Like it's insane. There's no way during playtest people were like, why is this still going? I don't want to do this anymore. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's almost as if they never playtested this game. I mean, it's the only explanation I can come up with because every single playtester would have come back going, absolutely not.
I kind of halfway consider Bravely Default, but I ultimately decided to not include it on my list because there's too many things about it that I loathe. There's a lot of things that I love about it, and I'm really excited for the sequel because I'm really curious to see how they refine it, you know, but in that first game, I really can't stand the story. I think the voice acting and the writing are just absolutely dreadful, but I love the battle system. I love the graphics. I love the music. I love all the modernizations of the JRPG formula. All the little features that they give you are just spectacular. They make it so much easier to play. It's just great.
The story and the voice acting didn't bother me. It's in the story. Is the story great? No, but it wasn't, you know, like the writing was goofy and stupid, so I was okay with that. You know, I thought most of the voice actors were miserable except for Ringabel's voice actor, who was delightfully over the top. So I just dealt with it. You know, I could just kind of compartmentalize that away. To me, it's just that ending. It's just the fucking ending of this game that just, it's not even the ending. It's like,
by the ending, you mean like the last 30 hours.
It's the fourth act of the game because the last bit, that tiny bit of the game after you clear through the stupid trials of Hercules they put you through to get to it. That last bit is actually a really solid ending to a JRPG. It's that it's the bridge to get there. That's so frustrating. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, they do some things to try to alleviate it when they, you know, how they mix up the world. And some of that stuff is kind of funny and enjoyable goofiness, but it's, there's no way in hell it even approaches making up for the dumb garbage they put you through to get there. So it's, this game had potential for me to be like top 3DS game, you know, in years, but it, it just shits the bed so hard, but it does so many things correctly that I couldn't put it on, couldn't exclude it from the list, except for the fact in like 9 iterations of this list I did.
All right. Clearly a fringe game for you and more so for me, but it is your number 5. All right. Well, let's move on to Guillaume.
Sure. Well, I had such a hard time choosing which game would be my number 5 and which ones I would leave off, but I ended up putting Tomodachi Life as number 5. And I know it's, you know, a lot of people don't really appreciate the game the way I do, but I guess that's why this is a personal list and it's not something that we had to vote on. So yeah, like the Tomodachi Life, I mean, every criticism that you could level at this quote unquote game, I wouldn't use the quotes, but some people would, are probably correct. You know, like I would agree that it's very flawed and that it's entirely too repetitive, etc. But I just because of the way that I've been playing the game, I've had like this experience that I haven't had with any other game. And just from basically collaborating with Karen, like making Miis of the people we know and putting them in the game, and then having those Miis and the stupid things that they say and do have kind of, they can kind of change your perception of the people around you. And I think that's pretty amazing. Like, this is a kind of, you know, personal anecdote, but it doesn't really have that much to do with the game. But my parents never, ever wanted to have a pet. And then when my sister got pregnant, she gave them her cat. And it was just crazy to see, like, my dad become so fond of the cat and just, like, loving that cat. And eventually the cat died. But then in my game, my dad's me. I gave him a rent-a-cat coupon, and then every time, like, it's probably confirmation bias. I'm sure they all say that, all the characters that get a cat. But my dad seemed to always say, like, I have a cat that visits me sometimes, you know, and it's just so adorable and so cute and kind of makes me go like, aw, my dad really misses Capsule, you know, and, it's just like little things like that, you know, like the kind of writing that you saw around this game seemed to, when it came out, seemed to revolve around these kind of very personal stories, you know, like on usgamer.net, Jeremy Parrish wrote about kind of the strangely touching way that they, like he and his wife had a kid in the game and, you know, they were currently kind of struggling trying to have a kid. And so like they kind of stupidly grew attached to this me that they sent out to the world, and that's just the kind of story that can happen in this game. As limited as it is, these like scenarios that are in the game kind of go beyond the game, just depending on who you have put in your game, the people around you that you know. So yeah, like I think it's, there's something to be said about that, and I did think I think it's my second most played game on 3DS after, like, the Street Pass games.
How many hours? Was it like 70 hours or something, didn't you say?
Like, 85.
Man. Woo!
So,
that's nice. Yeah, that game seems like a perfect match for your imagination and your sense of humor and your living situation. I mean, when you're living with someone who also gets really into it, and it becomes, you know, like those old stories people would share about Animal Crossing on GameCube, where they were living in the dorm and people would just kind of rotate through and everybody was, you know, interacting with each other locally in that way. I mean, that's so ideal for Tomodachi.
Yep.
So yeah, I'd hoped the personal interaction story was going to be, I woke up and Karen was mad and realized it was because something my me did, because that would have
no, but sometimes, like, we kind of, because we both really love the game, like, sometimes we'll mimic the things that they do, like, in certain situations. Like, it's become an in-joke, and it's pretty cool.
That's great. Okay, John, how about you? Number all right, 5.
I got a cheat for personal enjoyment, strictly from a personal enjoyment perspective. This year was a good year if you were a fan of Ghosts and Goblins games, in general. And I have to say, number 5 is going to be Gargoyle's Quest 2. which came out on PC. Nice. That's number five. Absolutely, is number five. I really liked what Guillaume? Was that Descent?
No, I'm surprised.
Yeah. Oh no, it's really good. That's the thing. I mean, I liked it. I liked it on Game Boy, the original one. I have it on 3DS, and this one just kind of takes that, and it really, you know, I liked it, but it Game Boy games. See, that's the thing. I never owned a Game Boy, much to my shame.
I thought you were gonna say much to my surprise. Like, no, John, you shouldn't be surprised. You didn't own a Game Boy.
yeah. So, I mean. Playing Game Boy games always, it just feels weird to me. It just feels really cramped because, you know, I never had one, so it was always like, I never wanted to play on the LCD screen.
Is tiny.
Yeah, it just feels weird. And so this one just removes
all that. Every game is China Warrior.
John, you don't really like, the controls on Nintendo's portables.
They
seem
3DS.
To bother you. I think we discovered that recently with Mario 3,
yeah,
right?
So. Yeah. Definitely not on the 3DS, which is why I'm looking forward to it.
So I take it you played Gargoyle's Quest 2 on the Wii U?
Absolutely.
Because you do have the choice.
Yep, I did. And it's fantastic. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a really good blend of, I mean, it does everything. I mean, the gameplay is very similar, of course, to the Game Boy mm-hmm. predecessor, but it's just a lot better. It lets them, you know, the power of the NES lets them really flesh out the concept more.
Christ.
It plays very, very similarly, but it's just, it just moves a lot better. And, you know, it's just the environments look a lot better, obviously. And it just, for me, I think the most important thing for me is it really evokes that kind of old school, Capcom magic. And, you know, kind of what one of the things, like, I mean, because those old school, like, you know, Ghouls and Ghosts and all those kind of games, kind of what made me, that's sort of the thing that made me fall in love with games to begin with. Like back when I used to see them in the arcades, then they came to the NES and all kind of stuff. So really like this game, really like the Firebrand character. Very cool game.
Excellent. Well, I didn't even consider Virtual Console games, but I'm kind of glad you did because I think that game needs to be talked about more and I loved it too.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, there was a couple of very, very notable releases, one which will be coming up next.
Indeed. All right. Well, my number five is Stealth Inc. 2, A Game of Clones, I believe is the subtitle.
Nice.
You know, kind of a late year release on the eShop. It is for now a Wii U exclusive. I have to imagine that they're working on ports to other systems. And I suspect that you haven't really heard many people talking about this game because it is a Wii U exclusive. And unfortunately, that means it's not getting that much attention. I bet you what you'll find is that sometime in 2015, when this game comes to PS4 or something like that or Steam and a lot more people start playing it, you're going to start hearing a lot of buzz about it because it is a superb game. I don't even like the first Stealth Inc. This one is so much different. It plays so much better. It's so much more interesting and just super fun. I mean, mm-hmm. It is kind of a puzzle game. It's kind of a stealth game, but more than anything, it's a 2D action platformer and it's fast paced. The controls feel absolutely perfect and it's incredibly clever. It's challenging. It looks amazing. The lighting effects and all the animations, everything about it is so extremely well done. And the soundtrack is, I think, maybe one of the best soundtracks of the year as well for a video game. So, I really adore this game. My only regret is I haven't had as much time to play it as I would like. Mm-hmm. I've actually got a little bit stuck in it. I probably need to consult an FAQ because part of it is just, being a non-linear game. If you play it for a while and then put it down, it can be difficult to figure out what's going on when you come back to it. But I really can't wait to go back to it. And I think I've played about half. So there's a whole bunch of game left to do. It also has a 2D local multiplayer game, which I did mess around with a friend, and we had a really good time with that too. And the puzzles are quite a bit different when you're playing with two people because you can interact with each other I think the way it worked was that one person was controlling the gadgets. And the other person was doing the platforming. So it gets really weird and you have to coordinate a lot. It's similar to Portal 2, but a little bit different. Anyway, it's just StealthInc 2 is really a big surprise for me, and I'm so glad that I took a chance on it. And I've tried to recommend it every chance I get, because I think nobody's playing this game, and it's so great.
Yeah, this is one of the games that I've been catching up with, or trying to catch up with, in the last week, and I'm just shocked at how much I like it, because just like you, I toyed a little bit with the first StealthInc, and it just didn't grab me. And the second one, it was almost instantaneous, you know, like the structure, yeah. The way that they present the story immediately grabbed me. And it makes the whole kind of like test chamber kind of structure that they have more palatable. You know, like the first game mm-hmm. is just a series of tests, basically. It's a series of stages, and you've got like one puzzle, and then you move on to the next stage. But here, yeah. It's they tie it, you know, together with, you know, a sort of Metroid structure. And like you would think it shouldn't make this big of a difference, but it does.
It makes it feel more like an adventure and less like a grind.
Yeah.
Because it's a tough game. It is really challenging. The platforming is tough, and the puzzles that you have to solve with your platforming are just really intricate and really challenging. And a lot of times they require, you know, really good reflexes and creative problem solving. It's just a brilliant game. I mean, maybe it shouldn't be surprising that, you know, from the developers of Fluidity comes a game that Johnny really likes, but it's very different too. And, yeah. I love to see that this developer has a lot of tricks up their sleeve, and I'm so excited to see what they do next.
Yeah. Like Fluidity, they had you like, you know, use water, but then, you know, you had the three forms of water, and they would try to put you in every possible situation, you know, like the puzzles were very varied, and they really exploited that concept to the most that they could. And it's the same thing here, because I've only got like the first item, like that box that you throw around and expand, mm-hmm. but you can mm-hmm. do so much with it, you know, like not just like put it on switches, but you can use it to have basically an infinite jump. And it's crazy, you know, like you throw it in midair, you call it back to you, you throw it again, and you just, you float. It's, when you discover that, like you realize, oh shit, there's so much you can do with these. And, it feels like there's so many possibilities to solve the puzzles, but probably in the end, there's probably the one correct way. But, anyway.
I think there is more than one in a lot of cases, but yeah. Moving on, James, what's your number four?
Okay. We're still in the amorphous cloud phase of my list. after this, it starts to kind of calcify and get real solid. But with number four, I ended up with the Wii U version of Shovel Knight.
Okay.
We've spilled a lot of, I mean, ink's not the word for it, but that's the expression on this game.
Blood.
Yeah. I mean, sure. Discussing this game over the course of the year. The part about this game that's kind of exciting is they're still releasing stuff for this game. Like, so they're the next release for this game is going to let you play as Plague Knight, and they're going to produce content that takes advantage of the fact that he can fly. Because ultimately, if you can fly in this game, it really kind of loses what makes the game charming, because they had to kind of rework stuff. So this game is still evolving as we play it. There's already a ton of game there that's really well executed. It's not, you know, we've mentioned this just recently. It's not just that it goes like, hey, remember that thing you really liked from those NES games? Here's more of that. It's like, hey, if somebody was making a game in 1993 and the Super Nintendo had never come out, what would they have made? Like, having the history of all the games that came before it, where could they conceivably have ended up? And I'm super happy that that thing exists, because it plays so well. It's everything on it just sort of works perfectly. And that's really, really cool. Like, there's so many ways they could have screwed this game up, and they didn't. And it's impressive considering, I mean, this is effectively, this was their debut as a development studio. And it took a long time coming. We saw this game almost 2 years before it came out, but I was really pleased with the experience playing it. I mean, it'll probably come up again, so I'm not gonna speak too much more about it, but. Honestly, we've talked about this game. We've probably devoted 3 hours of podcast time total to this game already. I mean, you should play Shovel Knight if you haven't played it. And it came out on for consoles, at least as a Wii U exclusive for a while. So yeah. I mean, it's you should have played this game already. And if you haven't, what the fuck are you doing?
Shame on you.
I think it's coming to PS4 and Vita pretty soon.
Yes, it is.
I think, but it's still
it's,
not out.
It's going to have Kratos in it, though, so they're going to get the nice part.
I'm so jealous that I don't get to play as Kratos Shovel Knight.
How will I ever survive?
That's cool. It's another cool thing for people to do, so I'm not going to slag on it too
much. If you've played it, though, already, the stretch goals they originally promised out of the Kickstarter, they're coming in updates, and the one with Plague Knight's coming up soon, so... That's something to look forward to going back to and re-experiencing that game in a whole new way.
Uh-huh. Yeah, maybe Shovel Knight will be on our 2015 Game of the Year list too. We'll see about that. All right, Guillaume, your number four.
My number four is a Wii U indie game, and it is Scram Kitty.
Ah.
This game doesn't look like much. Like, I'm not a huge fan of the art because of the way that the view... like, I don't know, like you're in some sort of spaceship that clings to walls, but you're looking from directly overhead. So it doesn't even look like a spaceship. It doesn't even look like there's a human in there, but it doesn't really matter. Like, I think maybe they should have gone with different art. And like the titular Scram Kitty is not a villain, but he looks evil as shit. And I don't know why. But yeah, like the art I could.
Cats are fucking monsters. That's why.
Right. The art, I could take it or leave it, but the gameplay, I think, is just phenomenal. Like, it plays like no other shooter that I've ever played, and it combines that with platforming of a kind that I've never really done before. And I just think that's amazing, because there's a shit ton of platformers out there, and a shit ton of shooters, and I feel like this one is really original, and not only that, but, like, we were talking about, like, the way that stealthing kind of... just takes this one idea and does like a million things with it. Well, this game has, I don't know, like 40 levels, and they pretty much all feel different to me. Like, they've all got some sort of hook or like some different way of doing things, and it asks you to approach the obstacles in a different way.
And that game gets hard as shit too.
It sure does. Yeah,
it is a tough game. But
I haven't rescued all the kitties, but eventually I want to. And they did at some point patch, I think, to make like the controls maybe a little bit more user friendly.
Really?
So yeah, so I should check that out. Actually,
I hadn't heard that. It didn't make my list, but it's definitely one that grew on me the more I played it, and it. There's a sweet spot in difficulty, I think, around the halfway point where it was clicking really hard for me. And it became very addictive, and I was really excited about it. I think towards the end, the levels started to get a little bit too frustrating, and I found that it had gone past my limit of patience.
Right.
But, I have loads of respect for Scram Kitty. Everything you said is true. Absolutely.
I've got some issues with the way that the game deals with, health. It's extremely hard to find, and you have to basically shoot a ton of enemies at the same time or in as short a time as possible to make it spawn. And so the health capsules are going to appear in the middle of a swarm of enemies. So it's just, I don't know, like it seems ill thought out. And,
there's a few things like that, but it is totally worth playing. And that is a Wii U exclusive.
Yep.
All right, so John Lindemann, you're number four.
I'm going to roll on to Demon's Crest, which is another VC game. The reason why I mention these guys is because they're actually fairly rare games that nobody even thought we were going to see, really.
Yeah. Some of us held a torch for many years.
Yeah, like it's kind of like Earthbound last year. I think it was worth putting on our lists, and these games are as well.
Yeah,
analogous to Earthbound in a lot of ways.
In a lot of ways, I mean, and again, this it takes me back to the Capcom days of my youth, whatever that even means. But,
when this game came out. What are you talking about?
You know, you're right. You're actually right. Literally, you are correct. So I mean, another great kind of part of the ghosts and goblins universe sort of thing.
The multiverse.
Multiverse, I guess you could say. Yeah, really, really cool. I mean, great graphics in this game. It just looks beautiful. Kind of a little bit of kind of open-ended ways to explore and go back and traverse the different environments and, you know, get new power-ups. And, you know, the power-ups are very varied. You can change into different types of, like, you know, gargoyles and stuff, and you can kind of, you can beat the end boss. There's three different endings, and then you can get some other type of, some type of gargoyle form and go back and beat a secret boss. There's just all kinds of cool stuff. I mean, this is the game for me where I wish that I would have known about this game back when I was playing through all my Super NES games, like back when it came out, because right. I would have loved this game. I mean, I love it now, but I mean, it would have been right up there. Like, it was just one of those games that just, you know, came out fairly late, slipped under the radar. But yeah, really, really good game. Highly recommended if you're into, you know, Super NES action platformers. Really, really good.
Under the Jondar.
Yep, under the Jondar.
No kidding. I'm deadly serious about this. I think Demon's Crest is one of the best reasons to own a Wii U.
Yeah, it's
that's
really
sad.
Good.
Why is that sad?
Because it's a fucking Super Nintendo game. Like, the best reasons to own a Wii U should be games that came out for the Wii U.
Sure, but I think Sin and Punishment was one of the best reasons to own a Wii.
Oh.
I mean, why not?
I don't know. Yeah, no, like, there's why kind not? Of... It's effectively, like, one of the only ways that you can play this game.
It's almost practically an exclusive, and it's a superb game. It is one of the greatest games ever made. It's
still,
so good.
It's still real sad.
Well, you know, whatever. Demon's Crest, it's worth buying a Wii U for.
It's really fun. That might be
a stretch, but if you own a Wii U, it absolutly is worth $10.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you can buy $8, a Wii U whatever. And download this and Earthbound, as James has, as James has a connection.
Yeah, I mean, you could waste $8 and get Earthbound.
It's 10.
Just throwing chum in the water.
You could waste $10 plus an innumerable amount of your life and get Earthbound.
It's like 30 hours, James. But anyway.
By Demon's Crest.
Anyway. Good pick, John, obviously. Guillaume and I are both, you know, massive fans, so we approve fully.
Yep.
My number four is Shantae and the Pirate's Curse.
Nice.
I never thought I would put a Shantae game in my top five.
A way forward game.
It was a series I always wanted to like so much more than I actually liked. And this is the one where they actually, they met my high standards, you know, they met my expectations for this type of game, and they did it with flying colors. And, you know, that's one of the fun things about Shantae. I mean, we talk about how it's, you know, it's very Metroid-y or whatever. It has, aspects of Mega Man and things. I mean, it's in a lot of ways, it's very similar to Shovel Knight. Of course, it's made by, people, who, you know, they worked with the Shovel Knight team for a long time, and they come from the same background. But, one of the fun things about Shantae and the Pirate's Curse, it is blazingly colorful. It is so bright and beautiful to look at. The 3D is used incredibly well. I think this game makes use of the 3DS graphical power about as well as any 2D style game I've ever seen. And the fact that they make such good use of the 3D effect as well. And I don't just mean the 3D boobs, although I think that's kind of a hilarious in joke. But just in general, I think the 3D layering is really glorious. It's a game that has incredible richness of parallax scrolling, which is kind of a lost art. But it's still, when you do parallax well, it still looks amazing. And when you have that in stereoscopic 3D, that really only adds to it. And they really put a lot of care into little touches like that, that are so easy to glaze over and not really pay attention to, but they add so much to the experience. And, you know, mostly I think, I think this Shantae just plays about 100 times better than the other games in the series. And frankly, better than anything I've ever played from WayForward. And I think if every future WayForward game plays as well as Shantae and the Pirate's Curse, then they'll become my favorite developer. I don't know if they can sustain that, but it's a massive step forward for that developer and for the franchise. And it turns a series that I always wanted to like into one that I actually really, truly, enjoy now. And I'm so thankful for that. And to know that they're already working on the next Shantae that they kickstarted, makes me really excited, because if they take this standard of quality even higher with the next game, or even just maintain it, then that could be on my top five list of 2015. So, you know, I just can't recommend it highly enough. I think it's a superb game, and it was one of the most addictive, one of the most just sort of immediately gratifying games that I played all year.
Yeah, it's just a fun adventure. And as I mentioned when I played it, when I talked about it, like, it's hilarious. And there's, like, great dialogue and also some great visual gags.
For the first time in the series, great dialogue. So let's go back around to James for your number three.
Yeah, this is stuff starts to actually get more solid. So for three, I'm the Wii U version of Smash Brothers, which to me, this game suffers a bit compared to some of its peers in this series, because I just don't feel like there's as much to do if you're playing it and you don't live with somebody or you can't get an online game going all the time. So the single player offerings here, there's the Smash Tour, which is abysmal. I mean,
it's not really a single, I mean, you can play it as single player, but that's not really what it's designed for.
Even with friends, I think that's borderline Geneva Convention shit right there. I mean, it's tedious in ways that I thought would be impossible in Smash Brothers. But it is. It is tremendously tedious. And I don't find it particularly enjoyable. I thought the single player modes just felt a little bit light compared to some of the other games. I kind of enjoyed the variety subspace threw at you. Like, I understand people don't like the platforming stuff, but I just like that it did different stuff constantly. The challenges do that in this game, but they're all very short. You know, most of it can be cleared in, you know, 30 seconds. So it would have been nice to see some more, you know, opportunity there. As a multiplayer game, of course it works great. The online works great. You know, my create a stage, live and burn is wonderful. John has personally experienced it. It's a real nightmare. And
yes,
it should be every Evo stage from this point forward, because literally everything you do will result in you die. You can't not die in that stage. It's beautiful. I watched the two Sonic AI level 9s just straight up cheat. Like, that stage confirms that the AI cheats. It's beautiful. I mean, you saw it, John. They were floating around stuff in ways the physics engine does not allow for.
I've seen a lot, James. One might say I've seen too much.
Yeah, exactly. So
I've seen some shit.
I mean, it was just like a really, it's really fantastic game. It's just, I would have preferred there to be more stuff that allows me to just sort of get time with the game without it just being another match, another match, another match, another match. Stuff that lets me just get more out of it when I don't have people to play with. And ultimately, that's what's kept it out of my Wii U more than it's been in lately.
It sounds like you expected this to be even higher on your list.
I did.
You're kind of justifying why it's only number three.
Right.
But obviously, I still love it.
I expected it to be, you know, to be challenging for the top spot. And it's the two games in front of it, that it's closer to the two behind it. Let's put it that way.
Okay. That's fair. I think you've explained yourself.
Yeah, I think it's funny that you bring up the lack of things to do as a knock against it, because I actually think it's the only Smash Brothers that I truly enjoyed, because it cuts out the platforming crap, which I was naturally attracted to, because I dislike fighting games and I love platforming, and so I would stick with those modes, and I would think, well, Smash Brothers really isn't all that. And in this case, you know, like, I was forced to engage in combat. Like, I was forced to play against the AI. I was forced to play against people online. And as a result, I grew to appreciate the combat much more.
Well, see, and that stuff is fine. I still did that, but I want to have variety. I want to be able to go and do something else. I mean, if he could find time to put in 11 billion trophies and put trolling in every single one of them, they might have been able to find some time to design something a little better than Smash Tour.
Oh, man. The writing for those trophies is unbelievable.
It's amazing. I mean
the time that people put into that is so crazy.
Yeah. Like, certainly they could have come up with something. It didn't have to be a full-blown subspace emissary, although I thought that mode was stupid and goofy and wonderful. But something more than what they did.
They should, you know, for the next Smash Brothers, if they ever make another one, I guess Sakurai's like, not me, but we'll see. If they ever do another one, they should let Platinum Games make the single player mode.
That would have been stupid.
That seems like exactly what Smash Brothers need. Just something over the top, completely nonsensical, but who cares?
I mean, you remember the actual story videos from Subspace Emissary. They're the best part.
I do.
They're fucking mental.
Yeah, they're idiotic. Yes. I mean,
they're
but actually playing that mode was nothing like those cutscenes.
No.
So that's kind of the problem.
Yeah,
so.
But I mean, like I said, I still had fun with that mode just as a supplement to the core gameplay. And I just felt like that supplement wasn't there this time. So.
Sure.
It's weird to play a Smash game and feel like there's less there than the previous one.
Okay, well, we'll probably hear more about Smash, so but that's a good argument, James. All right, well, moving on to Guillaume, number three.
My number three is Azure Striker Gunvolt, and I know that I liked the game more than you know, you, Johnny, and James, but I don't know, it just clicked with me, the fast pace of the action and the way that this gameplay was familiar while being different. You know, I really enjoyed the way that you had to tag the enemies and then use kind of your electrifying field to actually damage them. I thought that was pretty clever in the way that you would basically like slow down your descent when you were activating it. It was also a pretty clever touch. It just affected the platforming and the combat in a very satisfying way, and it made it feel like you were kind of playing, you know, like something like Mega Man X, but you weren't. And I don't know, like I really didn't pay attention to the story or anything like that, but the game, as far as the action goes, I think had a lot to offer. I also was kind of disappointed by the lack of things to find in the levels. I think that Mega Man X has a lot more hidden secrets to it.
I think if you look at the games that those people in particular made, the Zero games, even more so, like it's noticeable.
Right. Yeah, the level design is not that interesting in Gunvolt.
No, but I enjoyed the combat, and I enjoyed it's also got some interesting challenges, like not achievements, but like you can get in-game rewards for, you know, clearing stages rapidly or getting combo going and keeping it for the whole level and things like that. And so yeah, there's you can sink a lot of time in this game, and I really enjoyed it. It gave me, I don't know, it's kind of like what I expected games to be in the future back when I was playing the Super Nintendo, you know?
You know, there are certainly elements of this game I really like, but when I was in my Capcom just getting hives because I was in withdrawal and I was playing Phoenix Wright on the eShop, and then I had Mega Man Zero Collection in the DS slot on my 3DS, like, things had gotten real out of hand that weekend. I realized why, because it had been about 2 months since I played Gunvolt, and I realized why that game always sort of just never quite got there. And I think it just lacked a certain speed, you know.
I talked about the tempo, and it just the action never clicked for me. It on paper it looks like a game I should fall in love with, and I was disappointed that I didn't.
But
it's well made, and I think I understand why you like it, Guillaume, and I think it's, you make a strong case.
Yeah, and as I said back when we discussed the game, I think I just had the right gear. Like that's the thing, you can customize your character, you can find gear, mm-hmm. you equip it, and I think I had just the right gear for my playstyle, and I could dispatch enemies very quickly, so the tempo was just fine to me.
Cool. All right, Lindy, you're number three.
Number three is Shovel Knight on Wii U.
Mine too, by the way.
Really good. James, he hit the nail on the head. I mean, when he said it's just everything just works so well with this game. You know, with these kinds of like sort of retro things, I find that with a lot of these games, they always kind of, they try to almost play too much on the retro stuff. And,
remember,
you know,
this?
Kind of. Yeah, exactly. Like they kind of like kind of cut corners like, hey, you know you like that game? Well, this is going to play exactly like it, and we're really not going to add anything to the concept. Or, you know, go outside or think outside the box when we design it. But they did. Yeah. That's what I loved about it, is the fact that they kept it right within that kind of, you know, that sweet spot. But they went outside of it just enough to make it feel like a new experience, but not alien to something that would have come out in 1990, let's say.
Right.
Right.
That's why Shovel Knight works so much better than something like Mega Man 9 and 10, which are really well made and really good games, and I like them a lot, but Shovel Knight just blows them away because it is not at all a slave to that tradition.
Right.
And the bravery of going out and making a retro game that is like very clearly appealing to people of a certain age and who like a certain era of games, and then saying, you know what though, we can actually make something better than those people did back then, And that takes guts, and they totally pull it off.
And see, the thing is, though, that if people had kept making those games, they should have been able to make something better. Because
that's exactly what I like. It feels like they took one of those games and said, okay, if you had the stuff that you could do, the online components, you know, being able to save and being able to do this and that, what if you took all of that stuff and brought it back to, you know, 1990 and made a game? What would it be? And it's Shovel Knight.
Even to down to the game runs in widescreen.
Yeah.
It's a 2D platformer where they actually use widescreen to make the levels bigger and wider. And that changes the way the levels are kind of laid out, you know, because these screens are just bigger than they were in the old days. And it's a very subtle thing that you don't really think about that much. But, this game doesn't run on NES. There's no point in making it in 4x3. People will have widescreen TVs now. And, and the 3DS has a widescreen. I think it just makes sense.
I think Mega Man 9 and 10 is an interesting set of games to bring up here, because the reason I never went nuts over those two games is it's Capcom hadn't made those games in so long, and that's people who went crazy for them, but they hadn't made an NES style Mega Man game in almost 20 years at that point, and it showed. Like, it was like, hey, we really don't remember exactly how to make these. I think they would have been better off if they had said, okay, this is the last Mega Man game we made. Mm-hmm. Let's design out from there. And I know that's not the Mega Man people love, but that's the Mega Man that showed evolution and progress. That's the biggest knock against that series. That's the biggest knock against franchises that have hewn close to their tradition and not really tried to evolve, is that they always end up the same. And this game is an evolution from those games that didn't evolve, that stayed where they were. This is the rapid burst of evolution versus the slow progress of over 1,000 generations.
Now, with all of that said, how excited are we that these guys, apparently Yacht Club Games, want to make Shovel Knight 64?
I don't know.
I
think that is delicious. I think that is the most.
I don't know what that means.
Like,
though,
enthrallingly risky thing that you could possibly do, and I want to see these guys go back and say, you know what? All those 3D platformers on N64 were so much fun, and they don't work in the modern era. You go back to those games and they just don't work the same way.
Yeah.
And we have to figure out how to maintain what was so cool and exciting back then, but polish it and make it something that actually fits in the modern era. And that idea is so exciting to me.
My concern is that it took them forever to make this game. Imagine what it's going to take them to. I mean, we'll all be dead by the time.
Yeah, but now they get that Shovel Knight money.
We're all going to be dead before Shovel Knight 64 comes out. I mean,
yeah,
I mean, our grandchildren might be dead. I mean,
it's such a crazy concept. I'm like, I'm with you.
I want to see it so bad. I at least want to see the 3D model. At least I gotta see that, even if they don't make the game.
Yeah, I'm giving them the wink and the gun.
So that was number three for both John and myself. So we come back around to James for number two.
Yeah, number two for me is, appropriately, Bayonetta 2, which, you know, I had very, 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 very limited experience with the original Bayonetta. In general, character action games are something that I've somewhat shied away from, because I know we catch shit when we say you have to memorize all these combos, but then people immediately go, "We only have to memorize like 10 combos." The defense is, you don't have to memorize combos.
Yeah.
You usually need to memorize about 10, and it's like, well, that's memorizing combos, but it's not the kind of game that I usually find myself drawn to. I always recognize they're good. You know, I've played some of the Devil May Cry games. I understand what makes them tick. I understand what makes them good. They just, you know, it was just never there for
that's
me.
Exactly how I am too, and that's why I have not picked this up.
The thing people
so
hate,
this is interesting the, me where you're going
the thing
with
that people say about like Devil May Cry, for example, Dante's fucking idiot. Well, like, yeah, of course he's a fucking idiot. He should be. That's what it gets me excited about these games, is that they're why I've always wanted to like these games is they know what they are. You know, they don't take themselves too seriously. We're not dealing with grim, dark grays and browns. We're dealing with these games that are just gore fests and just chaos and explosions, and just, you have to just be totally on top of it. And part of me has always really looked forward to that. So when I bought Bayonetta and Bayonetta 2, and I hammered through Bayonetta and just ran through it so I could get to 2, because I wanted to be done with it. I know that sounds terrible. Because we were approaching this day. We were approaching today, and I was trying to get 4 more games in before we got here.
Right.
So I was like, I've got to get through Bayonetta 2 fast. And so I got through Bayonetta just to get myself ready for it. And then I got to 2. And there is so I understand we've gotten some stuff to talk back about people who think Bayonetta does some things better, and I can see where they're coming from. But Bayonetta 2 is just so much more of an experience. Just the visual insanity, this plot that's just over the top ridiculous. The humor is, for me, is perfect. I mean, the best joke in the series is probably in the first game, but the jokes in this game are constant. Just, there is this constant wave of just, no matter how crazy things get, everyone's gonna be incredibly stoic, except when they completely lose their shit. There's gonna be, no matter how crazy a thing you've seen, we've got something bigger this time. There's just this sense of constant escalation, of constant, you know, pushing you as the player, pushing the game as a conveyance for the psychosis all around you. Just what this game does on Wii U visually, it just, there's so much right about this game that even though I probably only dump 10 hours in it, there are 10 really, really satisfying hours of gameplay. And I am constantly upset with myself that I haven't gone back to keep playing it. But like I said, I was driving for today, and now that we're somewhat unshackled from the responsibility to get through these games, I'm going to be back there soon. It's just, you know, it's a matter of time, and it's a matter of hoping that I haven't gotten so rusty I have to go back through this whole process over again.
You know, I think Bayonetta 2 gets a lot of credit from a lot of people for not taking itself seriously at all. And it's a kind of game, like you said, that could very easily take itself too seriously.
Absolutely.
Mean, when it's got this extremely deep and technical combat system that you really don't have to engage with at a very high level. And not only that, but the game very frequently takes wide left turns and says, now you're playing a surfing game.
Right.
And now you're playing a space shooter. And, you know, and it throws you on these, ridiculous situations where it's like, yeah, we built this insane combat engine, but we're going to make you do this other thing for a while.
Yeah, at one point you're riding
a horse. It's not precious with itself at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think what makes it work is that it understands that makes this better. That makes the experience better. If the game took itself super seriously, the personality is so much part of this game. And I spoke about this off the show, and it's from the first game, but there's a series where they're panning through the characters and getting reaction shots. It goes to, you know, her male stalker. It goes to this little girl. It goes to this little girl's doll. And then when it pans to Bayonetta, it's just a crotch shot. Because the game's just like, fuck it, you know what you're here for. And everybody's freaking out, and then they get to her, and you're just like, game, what are you doing? Like, when that one came, I dropped the controller and then got killed by one of those button press events. Because it was, and I just laughed about it, because I'm like, you know what, fuck you. You know, I get it, fuck you. It's so there all the time. There's not a down moment in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate just that ride.
These go to 11.
Yeah, it's a roller coaster where everything is corkscrews.
All right, Guillaume, what's your number 2?
So I don't know if I'm going to stand by this ranking, as I play like 20, 30 more hours of this game. But for now, I think that Persona Q should be my number 2 game of 2014. I still have a lot to play, but I like what I've played so far. Etrian Odyssey 4 was my number 4 game last year, and I found in that gameplay, in that RPG format, something that I really, really loved. But one of the big problems I had with Etrian Odyssey was that I did not give a shit about anything happening to the characters, to anything.
Because
like
they're not characters. They're not characters. Avatars.
No, but also like you've got a quest, right, that you're trying to fulfill. Like, if they can't make you care about your party, which is just like these characters that you create for their stats. At least make us care about the world, and I did not care about the world that they created either.
Pretty much every character in that game is just there to give you stuff. Either give you directives or give you the opportunity to unload crap that you've come across or to give you the opportunity to buy things. I mean, there's nobody in the game that is there for the conveyance of plot.
Right. And like, if they give you a quest, it's like, oh, well, I'm a magician. I need this ingredient.
I need fruit.
Please go fetch. Yeah, go fetch
please
this.
To go get fruits.
Exactly. Like, it's really not that interesting. So, yeah. So that was Etrian Odyssey. Persona Q, it's the Persona series. It's based on the Persona 3 and 4 games, like the characters from those games. And I really enjoy that universe. I really enjoy those characters. And I'm just shocked by how much actually caring about the plot or caring about the dialogue in the game can enhance the experience, you know? James, you just talked about Bayonetta 2. I could not skip those cutscenes fast enough. Like, I'm watching through them. I'm watching them just in case that something cool happens, but I it's not doing it for me. But I understand, like, just the feeling
not having a soul will do for you.
But I understand the feeling, like, just how much it can enhance the experience if you do care about what's going on. And so that's what's happening with Persona Q. Like, you've got the kind of the conceit of Etrian Odyssey. You've got these dungeons that you're exploring. You're trying to find the exit, and you're charting a map as you go on the touchscreen. And that's still pretty cool. And they simplified that process a little bit, and they're all welcome additions. But, you know, on top of that, like, the quests are not just, like, go fetch fruit for the innkeeper, and you might get, like, she might let you store more items. Like, who gives a crap? You know, but in Persona Q, you're going to have like, oh, well, like this character in your party actually, you know, wants you to find ingredients for, maybe this is not the best example, a love potion. this is an anime story. You know, these are very anime tropes.
It's a Persona game. It's Persona. Yeah. Just roll with it.
Yeah. So I actually don't care too much about that quest, but like the like, a lot of
hilarious... It makes sense that they would have you go get that when you realize the context. Yeah. These are a bunch of Japanese school kids. I mean, that kind of charm-based stuff, I mean, it makes sense if you put it in that cultural paradigm.
Right. And, like, you've got, like, the kind of the horny mascot thing, like the bear. And, like, even if you don't care about that character, and even if you don't care about, like, his love potion quest, you know that you're going to get a lot of cool and funny interactions with the rest of the group, you know? So that's what I'm enjoying a lot. And,
so did you play Untold?
No, I skipped it because I thought I would do an overdose of this type of game.
I mean, they're trying to overdose you because you've got Untold 2 coming up, and then they've got Etrian Mystery Dungeon and Etrian 5. So yes, they're trying to kill you.
Yeah, and Untold, like, I played the demo, and the flavor of dialogue that they had was, again, like, I could not.
Okay, I hadn't played the demo. I've played 4, and I've just started Q, so I wasn't sure how Untold felt.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it. Sounds like they want to cram more story, but they don't know how to do it.
Right.
Here, I think that they actually got solid characters, even if, you know, they might be tropes, and they know how to make punchy dialogue or, you know, or funny jokes. You know, it's a skill. And yeah, like, it's not just the dialogue and stuff like that that really adds to the experience. They added a lot of the combat proper to Persona and a lot of the character customization. And I think it just gels really well, you know? I think I already said that in the previous episode. But yeah, it's two great tastes that taste great together.
Nice. John, your number two.
Number two, Smash Brothers for Wii U.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of good times.
Also,
this
my
one.
Number two. John and I are in lockstep for now, at least.
Yeah, lots of good times had with this one with James and everybody. Everybody.
Yeah, John and I have done some real awful, awful shit.
We've left a trail of pixelated blood behind us. That's for sure.
I mean, we've done some matches. People immediately on Twitter are like, "What the fuck was that?"
That's what that was. You could just do real stupid things with the item editor in this game.
Did you play all bumpers on Live and Burn? Yeah, you did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I can't wait for the... I mean, they're still updating this. We've still got tournaments, which I think will probably give us an excuse and a better way to play online here in 2015. And then the level sharing feature of your custom levels, that's still coming. And God knows the damage that you guys are going to inflict upon the world once that thing's available.
I mean, really, really the trick, and I'm going to go ahead and spoil the technique here, because an artist is always willing to give away his.
Yeah, you got to give it away to keep it.
An artist is always willing to give away his techniques, because that means that he has to push himself harder.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The trick is to make the smallest stage possible and then point the cannons at the ground at an angle, because they won't be able to stop when they hit the ground and they'll just roll straight off the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So the goal is to make them in a place where it becomes difficult to fight vertically. So they're at an altitude where you think you can jump, but ultimately you're going to get sucked in by the small gravity well that surrounds each cannon. And the goal is to make people attempt to jump and ultimately find that that jump has now become their own act of suicide.
Also, this is how Retro Studios designs Donkey Kong games also.
And then you go ahead and just fill that fucking stage with bumpers only. And you're done. I mean, because...
Also, gust bellows. You can never have enough.
Yes, that's there, right. There's the custom. One of my custom taunts is Gus Bello Fellow. Because
yep. So, I think Smash Brothers for Wii U, which again is my number two. Also, I have not played nearly as much of this game as I want to. I have not had time. It came out at a terrible time for me personally.
Yeah.
And that's not the game's fault. I have thought about this game. I've probably spent more time thinking about I wish I was playing it than I actually have playing it, mm-hmm. which is really sad. But I think this is a game that I'm going to play for a long time to come. And in 5 years from now, if I look back and say, what was my favorite game of 2014? This will be it. The problem is I'll have mostly played it after 2014.
Yeah.
And so that's the only reason it's not my number one. I think this could end up being one of my favorite games of all time. But I just haven't played it enough right now to say for sure. But I am so fucking happy with it. And in almost every regard. I mean, yes, it's true. The single player content is probably less than Brawl or maybe even Melee, arguably. I just don't care.
Yeah, you know,
that's not why I bought this game. I wish that stuff was better, but it's ultimately kind of immaterial to me. And the fact that the online works trumps, I mean, fuck single player.
That is exactly
in the presence of a functional online mode, I don't give a fuck about single player Smash Brothers.
Yeah, that's exactly. Now that's partially why I didn't put it at number one. I was agonizing over it, but you know, the single player maybe could have been better. You know, I was kind of, but I mean, literally, like I think if I checked my stats right now, single player, I've literally played something like 10 to 15 minutes maybe, and multiplayer.
You still haven't unlocked all the shit, John.
No, I haven't even unlocked anything.
I had everything unlocked like the day after I bought the game, John.
I swear to God, I put in, like, what's the first trophy that you get for hours played? Is there one for 50 hours played?
I'm sure there is.
I have the 50 hours played trophy, and all of that is in multiplayer.
That's awesome.
I mean, I haven't even touched single player, and I don't care. I'm like, Johnny, I don't care.
But John,
I do not care. I don't give a shit about anything but the multiplayer.
John,
that's how good it
John.
Is.
John. You need to fucking do it so you can get the Pac-Land. You need to get the Pac-Land stage, and you can be a real motherfucker and pick the Pac-Land stage.
But that's exactly it, right? That tells you everything about it. The only reason why I would play anything
is to troll the shit out of everybody.
Is to troll the shit out of anybody in multiplayer.
I love Pac-Land.
We're gonna play Pac-Land, and we're gonna make it so every item is the lightning bolt.
Pac-Land is terrible. Pac-Land. That's a terrible stage.
I love Pac-Land.
I don't know what's going on with that stage. That is some terrible stuff.
Basically, there's a replay, and once I get the video export and the new laptop setup, there's a video of John and I playing 75 meters in a level configuration that was so bad that there was about a 2 minute window where we simply could not get to each other.
Yeah.
Like, despite our best efforts, we just couldn't do it.
You gotta understand, this game is so good for James and I, right? Because we'll go online and we'll set up a room and people will be like, oh my God, the RFN guys are online. We gotta play. And we're like, we gotcha. We gotcha. We're gonna fuck your shit up. And we'll sit there and we'll be like, oh, Gus Bellows.
They'll get in there and find that John and I and the AI, who's level 9, have all been set to Jigglypuff.
Yep.
And
so
it's
awesome.
Just, it's just like all the items are the plus bomb. That's the only item on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on very high. It's just, they're just setting each other off, and it's just a nonstop volcano going on and Jigglypuffs. It's just
it's
goddamn stupidest.
It's genius. Yeah.
It's a sandbox, but I think in a lot of ways it's the best sandbox that Sakurai has ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And that counts for a lot, you know, and you can complain about modes and things like that, but if you're happy making your own fun, I think he's given you all the tools that you could need to do it. And, it's a glorious game. I've actually played a lot of it single player and I've had a good time. For me, that's like going through challenges or just playing Smash against the computer. I think that's fun. You know, it's a way for me to practice. I unlock things. I get trophies. Whatever. I mean, to me, that's perfectly a reasonable way to spend your time, but the multiplayer is clearly where it's at. And I just haven't had time to really dig into it, the way I'd like to. But, you know, I try to think for, this is a game that makes me think about the future and, you know, doing stuff like I just put in a vacation notice at work to take off the week for E3. So I'm planning to go to E3 and I'm planning on, among many other things and trying the new Zelda for Wii U. I plan on spending a good portion of E3 playing Smash Brothers for Wii U in 8-player mode with my friends, and I am so excited about that.
Fuck yeah. 8-player mode.
So, it could be the game of the forever, but forever is a long time to make that judgment.
If you're bored, put 8 AI or 7 AI and 1 human Jigglypuff level 1 on what's the stage? The underground stage, it's Kirby based.
Oh yeah, the Great Cave Offensive.
Yeah.
Yes.
That, offensive is the key word when you set it up that way.
Yes. I mean,
that level is kind of offensive. But you know, I think the one thing that game really needs, and I do think they'll go there is levels as DLC. And, cause the level selection is not the best in that series. And you know, TYP made a great point when he was over here a couple weeks ago and we were playing it. He's like, they should just sell the 3DS levels for the Wii U game. And I was like, you're right. They should do that. I would buy them. I think everybody would buy them. I mean, just to double the number of levels. And now all of a sudden you can play all of those. You know, some of them are small, but okay. Maybe you play with two people. Perfectly fine. So I think there's a lot more to come. I think we'll be talking about this Smash Brothers game for a very long time, much more so than the 3DS one.
Smash Brothers games, that's going places.
Yeah.
They're onto something there.
That series is really good. All right. Well, again, that was my number two as well. So let's go around to James for the big time number one game of 2014.
This should now be obvious.
Yes. I think I'm pretty sure I know what's coming here.
It's a really long title.
Yeah, it's Sonic Boom, The Rise of Lyric.
sweet. Mine now, two.
Yeah.
mine three.
There we go. It's clean sweep. Game of RFN.
Yeah. The 3DS game for me.
Well played. Well played, sir.
Plebeian. For me, it's Leighton versus Wright. And I adore the absolute hell out of this game. And when I talked about it on the show, I was probably 10-ish hours in. And they just felt like there was, I've been anticipating this game since it was announced. It was announced and I watched this trailer 11,000 times.
The box art should be James Jones's Professor Layton versus Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney.
It
should just like your name in cursive above it, Tom Clancy's. What if level 5 bought the rights to use your name as long as they included an apostrophe S?
Perhaps
a James Jones seal of quality.
I would give it to them. They could just have it. So it's funny because before this game was announced, pretty close to before it was announced. I don't remember who I was talking to, but we were just sort of postulating, like, just shooting the shit about video games, the crossover shit. And this one, like, well, I could just do a Leighton and Wright crossover. Fuck it. That's crazy enough to work. And then, like, they announced it, like, 4 days later, and I had to swear up and down. No, I did not know this was coming. I did not have an inside source. It was just bullshitting. But it works when you think about it. And even when this game was just a title and a trailer that looked, and an opening cinematic that looked stupid and ridiculous. You know, it worked. In my head, it always made sense, even if I didn't conceptualize what that was going to be until I played it. Because ultimately, you just replace the investigation of one game with the investigation of another game and then include the court stuff that doesn't have an analog in its peer. And you've built this game. You've essentially, you had a mode that was already essentially doing the same thing from a story standpoint, so you just swap them out. And it works. Where I was when I talked about this on the show, for the most prolonged period, I might have given
it's
an
been,
update.
It's been a while ago since this came up.
Yeah, I might have given an update as I was playing it later, but it hadn't clicked yet, and I wasn't sure why it wasn't clicking. Like, I was enjoying the character interactions, I was enjoying the game, the story was starting to kind of move in a way that I was going, wait, is this a latent game where there's actually magic in it? What the fuck's going on? Like, cause you're so conditioned by both of these series to just get kicked in the head when you're like, alright, I'm in. You're not shitting me this time. And, like, it was starting to kind of work, and I was kind of getting the feelings I get with playing both these series at the same time. I think I was still having trouble kind of compartmentalizing where the two were coming into play with one another. It's that second swing of the game where the action's moving now, the plot's advancing quickly, you're seeing these characters, the characters that were created for this game evolve, and you're starting to understand who they are and what they do. You know, the conspiracy that's part of both, I mean, both of these series have game-long conspiracies that are broken up into smaller mysteries, and that was starting to evolve, and the writing of Shu Takumi was really starting to click. You know, you could see he had found the voice for how he wanted to write the latent characters, even though they weren't his. And it was, you know, it was all starting to work. And I didn't talk about it on the show anymore. And I obsessed over this game. I would come home, I would make dinner while I was playing this game. I would close the lid, eat dinner, reopen the lid, play the game. Battery would need to charge. I'd put it on the charger. I would go prepare for tomorrow. I'd play this game some more, and then I'd go to bed late. It became a problem. And I just consumed it voraciously. And at the end of the day, I remember feeling just like I'd gone through this incredibly lengthy experience that was just really something else. Like, even though these were two franchises I'm deeply, intimately familiar with, between the two of them, if you don't include this game, I have played 4, 5, 6, 7. I've played 13 games in these two series, if you don't count this one. I mean, that's in like 6 years, 7 years. I mean, it's a lot. But there was something.
Yeah.
There's something about the two of them is. Being on top. I mean, I had played a latent game earlier this year and had
Your appetite for this shit is insatiable. I mean, if it could be sated, it would have been done by now.
Well, the thing is, like, I played latent 5 and thought, okay, this is fine. I didn't really like 3DS adaption. I played latent 6 and I was like, okay, yeah, all right. Yeah, okay, here we are. And it took a little while for this game to break through that malaise, and it. It's just,
so do you feel this is the best Professor Layton in a long time?
Yeah, I would say probably since the last game of the first arc, which historically
since
would be the
since number
arc.
Three.
Yeah. Okay. And it's
that was quite a while ago. That was
the Unwanted Future.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you.
I think that game is amazing. And that game is
yeah, I like that one quite a bit.
That game is stunning. And the games that came in the second arc are fine. They're good games. But this game is, I think, having a new writer in there really helped. I think everything just felt.
And the writer. I mean, your favorite video game writer.
He is a fucking amazing writer. And I literally at this point in my life could not be more excited for the fact that he's making this Sherlock Holmes Ace Attorney game. Because, I mean, it's just like, yeah, okay, do it. They basically said, okay, I really liked writing about this English gentleman who solves mysteries. Fuck it, I'm gonna do it again. I mean, it's so clearly what's happened here because this game's like 2 years old now. It's like, yes, do more of this. I'm there. Make it happen. I'm thrilled. This game is amazing. This game is so amazing that I pushed Carly until she just, but fine, I'll just buy the game! Because like, it's just like, you need to buy this game. No, really. I know you're playing Layton 5 right now. I think it's great. You need to buy this game. Why haven't you bought this game yet? Why, you need to buy this game right now. And yeah, I don't feel bad about it at all. I feel like will be vindicated within 10 hours playing it. And I play, love this game so much. I didn't take it out of my 3DS until all the download content came through. And that was like 3 weeks after I finished the game. Cause I wanted to experience all of them. And I was checking Monday, Wednesday, Friday when they came out.
Damn. Cause
okay.
Even like little download stories, even those are fun. Like it's, this game is amazing. This game is fucking amazing.
I believe you, but we have three more picks to go, and we're already going really long. So, Guillaume, your number one game of the year.
My number one game is perhaps a safe choice, or maybe not. Some people weren't feeling it, but Mario Kart 8. I just I ended up loving the game.
So you totally shut Smash out.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not a Smash.
Well, guess what? I totally shut out Mario Kart 8. So
fuck you too. All right.
Mine is Mario Kart 8 as well, by the way.
Oh, okay. So, yep. So you and John. All right.
Mine is also but, Mario Kart 8.
Anyway, Mario Kart 8, I just, like, okay, let's get this out of the way, the bitching out of the way first. The single player, the single player is crap.
Yes, yes.
There's no way around it.
It is bad.
It's abysmal.
Yeah, it doesn't prepare you at all. Like, it doesn't really teach you how to play all that well, you know? Like, it doesn't teach you how to use how to drive, basically, in Mario Kart. Like, I've had so many people struggle with the drifting and stuff like that. I think that they really need to revamp the single player, make it more of a tool to teach you how to play so that you can be prepared when you go online. Yeah. But, online is where I think the game really shines. Unlike Mario Kart DS, unlike the 3DS game, no one apparently found any kind of, like, blatant cheat. You know, there's no snaking, ruining everything. There's no shortcuts that don't make any sense. The tracks are just superbly well designed. And the whole anti-gravity thing adds a little bit more than I thought it would. Like, I wasn't really feeling it at E3 the first time that we saw it. But then they changed the setting. I don't know. They flipped a switch and they made the anti-gravity stuff actually fun. And recently, you know, during the holidays, I had some friends over and they hadn't played, Mario Kart since Mario Kart Wii. And, like, they were like, whoa, what is this? Like, are we racing on the walls? And this is actually kind of a little bit disorienting, you know? And that reminded me that I'm a jaded asshole. And that, you know, like, this kind of stuff is actually, this kind of stuff is actually, like, really impressive the first time you see it. And I think it does add a lot to the driving and the Mario Kart experience.
Yeah. The best times I had with Mario Kart 8 are when I saw it through my friend's eyes. And I saw, if you don't play every single Mario Kart, that makes these seem much more dramatic and it helps you realize just how awesome they really are.
I haven't owned a Mario Kart game, owned one, since DS. I didn't buy Wii, I didn't buy the 3DS game, out of principle, really, because that game is numbered wrong.
of course.
This one, I mean, the only reason I bought this one, I talked about it on the show, I bought this one because I also got a download game with it. I mean, ultimately, right. I ended up paying effectively $20 for both those games. It's like, okay, fine, I'll do that. But yeah, I mean, to your point, the single player stuff is miserable and
so cheap sometimes too. Oh my God.
Yeah. And the only joy I've gotten out of it so far is the online stuff. It's just, God, I want these games to work because I loved these games growing up. I struggle with them. So I'm glad, me too,
but let's hear some more positivity.
I'm really glad there's, I want you guys to tell me how to make this game work. That's what I'm coming down to.
Yeah, it's kind of love it or leave it, but I'm glad two of you really loved it.
I would sum it up, James, in like two words. Get good.
That's part of the problem. It's like, okay, I'm winning this cup by like 6.5 minutes. Great.
Yeah. Go ahead, I mean, John. That's the thing. I mean, for me, it's some of these, this is finally how kind of Mario Kart, I mean, it's just how it always should have been to me, you know? Some of these things that I would just start, like when I first played through and, you know, you're starting some of the new, you know, a new course, you know, some of them are just, they just take your breath away. Some of them are so gorgeous.
Yeah.
And they just keep going and they're so well designed. Like the one where you're going through the clouds and there's all of the, it's just, I was just like, oh my God, look at this. So gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And it just feels really good, man. It's so good.
And that DLC, they're doing it right.
Yes.
They are indeed. Doing it right.
Indeed. I was like, yep, I'm putting my money down on that. Don't even care. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, if not for the DLC, it might not have been on my list. Like, that's what helped me rediscover the game and gain a whole new appreciation for it. Just went back online and raced against people of, you know, all varying skills. And it just feels so good when you're winning. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it feels like you're not winning. It doesn't feel like people are cheating, like they would on the Wii version, for instance. Like, it just feels like, oh crap, like these guys really know what they're doing. I don't know. I used to be kind of a Mario Kart hater. Like, I never really got into the 64 version, and I would have like this kind of well, back when it was mostly kind of a single player affair against AI, I always thought that the game was really weak. But online is now easier than ever. Of course, like the online features that Nintendo offers are not up to par with what the competition offers, but it's just so easy to hop online and play a few races and then leave. And I think that's what's important.
Yep. I agree.
Okay. Well, then that leaves me. I'm the last one. I think, John, I liked your phrase. You said, you know, this is what Mario Kart always should have been. For me, that is also true of my number one, which is a game that I would have laughed if you told me this would be in my top five at the beginning of the year. But this game really surprised me and blew me away, and it's Kirby Triple Deluxe.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. I really, really love Kirby Triple Deluxe. I think it's amazing. Kirby was always a series that I wanted to like more than I did. And like Shantae, in a very similar way, Kirby Triple Deluxe really kind of, on the surface, it doesn't look that much different than the other games in the series. But when you play it, there's so many subtle improvements and polish, and they've really cut away a lot of the crap that I don't like about Kirby, and they've really turned up the volume on the things that I do like about it. It's such a smart game. It is so beautiful and well produced. And it really comes down to the main thing for me that sets this far and away above any other Kirby game I've ever played is the level design. It's spectacular. It is just astoundingly good level design. And that's everything to me. There are four 2D platformers in my top five this year, and Kirby Triple Deluxe is the best one.
And Duck Hunt Country isn't one of them.
That's correct. That is correct.
We all shut that game out.
That game is not even in my top 10. That game's not even in my top 10. It's a good game. It's a good game.
In part because it's almost a year old at this point.
Yeah, it's that would not have discounted it for me. I just don't like it that much.
I think it does put it out of our memory too a little bit.
Yeah. But regardless, Kirby Triple Deluxe, Guillaume, I give you the credit for convincing me to even give this a shot, and I couldn't be happier that I did.
So now that you've got Kirby as your top game of 2014, like, am I coming back for next week, or do you just not need me anymore? I'm like the fifth wheel now.
I think this is the point where Johnny wakes up in a bathtub missing a kidney and realizes this is all a dream.
Yeah.
It surprised me too, but I tell you, I played Kirby in a part of my life that was pretty down. I had just lost my job, and I was spending long days at home with not that much to do. And I was waiting to hear back from these companies I'd applied to, and for a while there wasn't getting very good news. And Kirby is so relentlessly bright and cheery and uplifting, but it's also, for the first time ever, in my opinion, an amazing 2D platformer. And it really hit all the buttons, and it's still a Kirby game. I mean, it still uses all the things that Kirby should be good at, and it uses those Kirby powers in ways that you've never seen before, that I certainly have never seen before. And I played a lot of Kirby games, and this one just stands very tall above the other ones. And it's also, I think this is no coincidence, I would say easily the hardest Kirby game ever made by a large margin. So, it's not that kid friendly, quite frankly. And I'm okay with that. I mean, for a game where touching enemies kills them, it's shocking how difficult it gets later on. And you know, maybe they have to pull in a bunch of lava and spikes and things like that to make that happen, but that's fine. I was continuously delighted to play through it. I got everything in this game. Everything. All the secret levels, all the crystal shards and things like that are hidden. The best hidden things by far in any Kirby game. I just adore it, and I would love to see them continue to make Kirby games in this mold and continue to push this, you know, very old and very traditional series. The way that they pushed it forward with this game kind of out of nowhere gives me so much hope for Nintendo and not only the Kirby franchise, but all their franchises. So,
As a as a fan of Kirby, I don't find the challenging end game and the good level design all that surprising. I do think that you should give Return to Dreamland a shot when it comes out on the Wii U eShop.
Yeah, maybe I will. That would be like the one game that I would download.
It's very much like in that mold, and that like mm-hmm. they were on that path, that same path yeah. that got us Triple Deluxe.
Yeah, even if it's 75% of the way there, that would probably, you know, be good enough for me. So yeah, it definitely made me curious about the couple of recent entries. Of course, before that, I think was Squeak Squad, which was apparently not that.
Oh
good,
no, there had to be one between that and Squeak Squad. I mean, there were the weird games. You're right.
Yeah, well, those don't count. I mean, I'm very excited about Rainbow Curse. You know, I love Canvas Curse. I like Mass Attack quite a bit, but yeah. there's just, you know, I'm talking about.
We don't
like,
talk about Squeak Squad.
I'm talking about real Kirby games, and Squeak Squad
yeah, exactly.
is one
we
of those.
Don't talk about Squeak Squad.
It is one of those, and it's apparently not very good. I haven't actually played it, but I don't have any interest in that. But Triple Deluxe is just, if you've given up on Kirby, as I kind of had, I implore you to go check it out. I think it might kind of blow you away, and it certainly did me. So
nice.
Okay, well, that is a big long segment all about our top five games of 2014. Well, thank you everyone for sticking with it, and
we can still slip in some just of our runner ups.
So right? says the editor.
Name them real quick.
Well, I do want to come to DKC's defense. Tropical Freeze, I think, is pretty amazing, and I just want to say that last night I finally played like the additional levels that you unlock when you find basically every doodad that's hidden in the game. There was a level where every platform is basically like these debris of planes that have exploding rockets on them. So you step on the platform and it rises up and then it explodes. And the whole level is like that. It's really spectacular. Yeah. And it ends with...
Yeah, because that game needs to be harder.
Yep. And it ends with a sequence where you're on a surfboard attached to a rocket. And
as you do.
I think I've said enough. It's pretty amazing.
I mean, that game made me on my list. I just haven't had a chance to play it.
It's a cool game. I just, it's not for me.
Yeah,
it's
you know, not, I played, it's just, I played, I played DKCR and said, okay, yeah, that's good.
Yeah. You know, this one stands above it.
Well, that's fine, but it's still, you know, the same stuff.
All right, quickly, James, runners up.
Yeah, Weapon Shop Delmasse. I just fucking love that game. I mean, is it great? No. It's funny? Yeah, it's funny as hell. It works on me the same way a lot of other games do. You should at least give it a shot. It's cheap and it's fairly long, decent experience. I'm gonna go ahead and say Rusty's Real Deal Baseball in a kind of weird way.
I considered it.
Oh, come on.
I considered that game. I really do like it a lot.
It wasn't in that fighting for the fifth slot. It was kind of below that 7, 6, 5, 4
right.
Ultimately, the mini games are just a little bit.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't pardon the pun, but kind
of
hit or miss. But
I won't pardon the pun. So
the connective
fine.
Tissue is amazing. I think in that game.
And then the ones that were really in competition for that last slot, Hyrule Warriors, which I'm shocked by how much I enjoyed that game. like legitimately, it is. It might be the best Musou game ever made. And people, Musou fans are the ones saying that.
Like, you may like stupidity more than you think, James.
Hey, James, just leave it in your Wii until it starts to tingle.
Maybe it already is. And then Persona Q, I just haven't played enough of it yet. I mean, I really just, I've only got about 6-ish hours in. I can't pass judgment on that game. What I've played.
It sucks when you don't feel qualified yet.
what I played, I like, but at the same time, it feels, you know, it just feels like maybe I'm going to get through this game and go, okay, that was fine. And then be done with it. So I don't know yet. It could work on me. It may not.
Guillaume, any others other than Tropical Freeze?
Sure. Well, about the same, like number 6, or 7, like maybe it was a tie between, DKC and Guacamelee. And I think that the fact that both kind of lust out to Tomodachi Life is because I've been playing them like co-op, and it was kind of this, not the same experience. Like, these are very different games, but it was the same experience.
Are you saying relationships ruin video games?
No. I'm just saying, like, that I had the same type of fun as I did, like, playing both games. You know, like, just collaborating with Karen. And it was really cool. And Guacamelee, like, a lot has been said already about that game.
If I hadn't played Guacamelee on Vita when it first came out, it would be in my top five this year on Wii U. It is a superb game.
Yep, and the rest of my list, I guess, like unranked, would have been Stealth Link 2. I still need to play more of it, but I'm floored by how good it is. Shovel Knight would have been there, and Kirby Triple Deluxe.
All right, John, any runners-up?
The only one that hasn't been mentioned here was just another VC pick that we talked about last week, which is Bionic Commando Elite Forces. I think people should check that out.
I think that's a January release, though, isn't it?
Was it?
I think that came out the
God
first week of January.
God damn it, John!
It's on the cusp.
Oh boy, here we go.
Definitely on the cusp.
Yeah,
it is fantastic. All right, for me, runners up: Smash Brothers for 3DS. Didn't get a mention. I think it's amazing. I mean, it's like a freak of nature that thing exists, and that it's really fun to play. It's not going to stand the test of time the way the Wii U game will, but I enjoyed the hell out of it for a few weeks. Mario Kart 8, I have a lot of problems with it, but I do really like it, and I will go back to that. I can't wait for the next DLC. I cannot wait. Bayonetta 2 could have been higher. I did not get enough time with it, although I'll say I don't think I will ever enjoy it as much as James, but it just, my sense of humor is just not, it's not the same, you know, but I do appreciate it. And I'm excited to play a lot more of it. The Fall is a game that Guillaume mentioned earlier in the year. I heard a lot about it on the Giant Bombcast Game of the Year stuff. It kept coming up for best story, best moment, best character, stuff like that. It is a really good, kind of old school PC adventure game on the Wii U. There's a ton of things that I adore about it. Ultimately, there's a lot of really shitty combat in that game that kept it off my top five. But it's still totally worth playing, really fascinating, and there's apparently more episodes to come on that one. And then finally, NES Remix 2, I think is great. Really, really loved playing through NES. And I skipped the first one, so it was very fresh for me. And I really, really enjoyed the second one. And I thought the selection of games that are represented there is obviously better.
Would you go back and play one, like, 6-7 months down the road? No? Okay.
Nope. Remix 2 took care of it. I still don't want to play the crappy black box NES games in the first one. So I'm totally fine skipping it. I am excited for what they do next with the series. I'm really curious to see how that goes forward. But anyway, those are my runners up. So
nice.
Thanks everyone for bearing with us through a very long segment here and a very long episode. We really appreciate everybody listening, and we hope that you got a kick out of our little recap here. We certainly had a good variety and a long list of games to be honored. And I hope 2015 is just as good. You know, when you consider just how few third-party games were released on especially on Wii U in 2014, I think it still ultimately was a great year for the system.
I mean, we've got a Namco Bandai game about lips coming out, so we're fine.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll see. Project Treasure, maybe. Anyway, please send your emails, send your own top five, send
close-ups
your ideas.
Close of your lips.
Yeah, send your thoughts on Nintendo Direct. send your predictions for 2015. We're going to be doing that probably next week. So,
yep. Send not predictions again. It's that time of year.
Yeah. Send anything you want to RFN at NintendoWorldReport.com.
I predict sadness and suffering.
Follow us on Twitter. You know, last week we gave our individual Twitter accounts. This week, I'm proud to say we have finally the much requested RFN Twitter account, thanks to Mr. John Lindemann. He took the initiative and said, you know what? I don't know why we've never done this. We're going to do it. So we are at RFN Podcast. There you go. Follow us. We will post when new episodes come out. We send out little things. You can send in stuff for listener mail. You can interact in all kinds of different ways. So follow us on Twitter at RFN Podcast. Retroactive, we'll have a status next week. I've got to do some more groundwork on that, but it is coming very soon. We're getting pretty serious about it. And as I already mentioned, we're going to do our predictions next week. So, stay tuned for agony.
God. Oh.
I'm feeling a cold coming on. I'm just
James, I got nothing this time.
John, yeah. I predict we will fail.
I got nothing.
That's the one that will definitely come true. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next week.
Or will we?
Bye.
Or will we?
I'm not predicting that yet.
No, I can't predict that. Later.
Peace.
And, like, imagine you're at the store and they're out of chargers. You know, like, this is not, like, optional.
So, yeah, I ran into this when I bought my GameCube. They sent less memory cards than they sent GameCubes to the stores.
Right.
Well, great. Congratulations. You can't save your game for a week until we get more supply. Mm-hmm. It's like, you can't. I have never bought a consumer.
And that was probably on the store, right? They probably didn't place enough orders. But in this case, it's Nintendo is creating a problem for themselves that they really could easily avoid. And I know they're trying to make this thing more profitable. And yeah. I think $200 is a good price for the system.
How much really? And let's be honest. How much really do you think the charger costs them to produce?
Here's my answer. I don't give a fuck. You have to put one in the box.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't give a fuck how much that thing costs Nintendo.
And keep in mind, like, the 3DS XL, the new 3DS XL comes with a 4 gig micro USB. Micro SD card.
Yeah.
Why not just, like, remove that? Just remove it.
Well, because then you can't download games, and they want you to fucking download some games. They'll charge it for you the first time. Go ahead and buy your games, and then you're screwed. But they got your money.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, by the way, the things I already have on my 3DS XL are not going to fit on that 4 gig card, so I'm going to have to go buy a bigger micro SD card.
Absolutely.
And get a screwdriver and replace the one that it comes with, because you have to have a screwdriver to do it. It's just
fucking unreal.
That's really dumb.
Here's the other part. Here's the other part.
What are you thinking?
Nintendo doesn't get any money from you buying the SD card. They get that cash from you buying that sweet, sweet charger.
I know.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, every way you slice this, it comes off as them just nickel and diming you. And that's, yeah,
they are, but the thing is, it's, I would understand it if it wasn't something that a lot of their audience already had. That, to me, is the difference. If it was a brand new charger that was only for this model and they forced you to buy it separately, that would piss me off. But the fact that I already have one, I'm just like, I don't really give a shit. I don't really care about it.
But maybe I want another one, John. Maybe I want to have three.
I hope they come
out.
John,
I'm giving them $200 fucking. They can give me a goddamn piece of plastic with a copper wire coming off of it.
So I can buy AC adapter skins. That's what I really want.
Yeah, it's a travesty. Let's move on. I want to segue into, like, from these low numbers, these low unit numbers, I want to segue into the Pokemon Shuffle, the free-to-play stuff that Nintendo's coming up with. Because the whole reason why free-to-play works on PC or on phones is because they're either open platforms or they're ubiquitous. And here you've got a 3DS, and you just maybe don't have the kind of the size of the audience necessary to make it really a big success. Well, so I find it really, really weird. You know,
So keep in mind, though, the cost of development of a lot of these, it's low. It's a low cost. Sure.
Still an experiment, I think.
They don't need a high activation rate to make money. And a lot of the free to play games on mobile phones, they're aiming for like a less than 1% activation rate and they can make bank.
Exactly. But that's because, you know, in big part because of the size of the audience. Like 1% of iPhone users is huge.
Exactly.
No. I mean, they're looking for less than 1% of people who download their app.
Yeah. I just find it interesting
It's not even necessarily about the size, though. Part of it's because the cost of development is so goddamn low.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting, though. It's an interesting change of heart on Nintendo's part because of what Iwata said several GDCs ago about.
But you know what?
They didn't want to bring the value
shit on
of games
have you,
down.
Have you seen the shit that comes out on the Nintendo framework for Wii U? He was fucking right.
Well, yeah. I mean, but it's just funny. I mean,
John,
Meme
Run was the highest selling Wii U game a couple weeks ago.
There's
he's fucking
garbage
right.
shovelware out there, but it's just. It kills me that they're now releasing free-to-play games, and this is exactly what Iwata should have been doing when he was shitting all over anything on phones. So,
I don't know, though, because
They're just kind of late to the party, I think.
I find the phone marketplace to be an ungodly mess of just garbage.
Yeah, it's hard to find what you want, you know, unless you can search for the exact title.
I'm not debating that at all.
I think ultimately he's right that this – I mean, think of how many fucking Flappy Birds clones came out on phones.
I'm not debating that a lot of phone games are shitty. I'm just saying
shitty, John.
I'm just saying that Iwata
if you were
basically
to round to the nearest decimal, to the nearest percentage, you'd hit 100%. They're all shitty.
I mean, Nintendo should have come around to this years ago. That's what I'm saying.
Mm. Well, they did. They've been dipping their toe in this kind of pay to do stuff model for almost 2 years now.
You know what? I didn't really want to have this discussion after all.